take approval of the minutes of the Committee of the Whole for January 11, 2011.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. James.
Second.
Second by Ms. Anderson. Discussion. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Seek approval of the minutes of the Lincoln Lincoln Special Committee of November 10, 2010.
So
moved. Moved by Mr. Langenheim.
Second.
Second by Ms. Holderfield. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Seek approval of the agenda. And the addendum, is there a move by Mr. Jay, second by Mr. Nudo?
No, I would like to have...
Mr. Nudo, you have the floor.
I would like to have item 9B, 1, 2, and 3 deferred for the next study session. And I can give reasons after I get a second.
Second.
Item B, 1, 2, and 3?
Yes, please.
Okay, we have a second discussion. Go ahead, Mr. Nudo.
We had a great study session meeting. A lot of good ideas came out of it. After the meeting, I spoke with Mr. Hall and Ms. Monty, and we talked about the fact that some of these ideas needed to be incorporated and added to. There were, out of 27 members, there were 19 that were there. I'd like them to see those items, number one. Number two, they told me that it would be very hard to incorporate in writing what needed to be done for this meeting, and we certainly didn't have an opportunity to take a look at it. And number three, I had a conversation with Mr. Kurtz and Mr. Weibel about pulling this yesterday, and I had verbal agreement to do so.
Mr. Kurtz, do you have any comment on this?
Yes. I talked to Mr. Nudo, correct, and I have changed my mind on I'd like to pull 9B1 because there were some very, very constructive comments, and the study session was extremely productive, and I was very pleased with the tone and tenure of it. And but I felt that the B2 and B3 were well discussed and that we can move forward on those, but B1 certainly needs more study, and I'd like to move that to the study session.
The motion would be to just pull. Let's clarify, we're only pulling things off the agenda. We're not deferring. There's no deferral. There's nothing on the floor per se. We're just pulling things off the agenda. Right now, the motion, if I clarify, is to pull items B1, B2, and B3 off the floor.
That's correct. So that other members can see it, people who were there could see the changes, have time to digest it, and I'm not so sure. Again, I honor Mr. Kurtz's word. His word to me yesterday was that we were going to pull it. So I had no call today. I called him, and he informed me at 4:45. What my caucus has been talking about that, and we only had half an hour to discuss this. So I think this is the honorable thing to do, to be honest with you, and I think it's the right thing to do to see what Mr. Hall has incorporated and have time to look at it. What's the hurry? What are we looking? Why are we trying to run this thing, like it's we're in a horse race?
Further discussion, Ms. Petrie.
Well, I concur with Mr. Noodle, and I previously expressed this during the study session and this evening at our own caucus that we need some more time to digest the process and the new information.
Any further discussion on removing items B1, B2, and B3? So all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes. Now back to the main motion to approve the agenda. Any discussion on that as amended?
No,
I said...
Mr. McGinty.
Oh. One of us
I'm
did.
Sorry, I thought Mr. McGinty
did.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the main motion.
Okay.
All right, so back to the main motion, right?
Yes.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Okay, we have an agenda. All right, public participation. We have a number of speakers tonight. I'll remind you, we have a total of 1 hour allotted, 5 minutes maximum per person. I think we have time for all of you, but I just want to remind you about that. First person is Mr. Joe Berkman. Also, I'd ask members to please turn down your cell phone or turn them off.
Thank you.
Hello. On behalf of the Atkins Group, we appreciate the opportunity to express our complete support of the proposed Olympian Drive extension project. We believe that extending this transportation corridor will create unprecedented economic opportunities, development opportunities in our community. The municipalities and their surrounding community need to work together. We need to work to mitigate differences. We need to work to move this project forward in an effective manner. This project will decrease interstate congestion, make the roads we travel safer for our community. The Olympian Drive Extension Project is an important investment in the future of Champaign County. Your past investment by the County Board in the Olympian Drive Project was a catalyst for commercial, residential, and industrial development in northern Champaign County, in northern city of Champaign, north of Interstate 74. Baytown Apartments, North Point Retail, Pioneers Commons Office Park, Ashland Park Residential, Interstate East Industrial Park, and Apollo Subdivision are among nine developments the Atkins Group has built in northern Champaign County, northern city of Champaign, along the Olympian Drive corridor. Thousands of jobs and residents have been attracted to this region of our community due to the previous commitment by the Champaign County Board to Olympian Drive. At this point in time, our community has a unique opportunity to retain the funding necessary to complete the Olympian Drive project. In order to ensure the future success and growth of our community, our firm encourages the various public entities, as I said before, to work together, to mitigate differences, and to seize this opportunity. If we do not act now, it could easily be many years or even decades before the funds become available for this project again. The Atkins Group urges the Champaign County Board to move forward on the Olympian Drive project. We believe its extension is definitely the most important economic and transportation project in Champaign County right now. Thank you.
Next up is William Cope.
I'm William Cope, 4018 North Lincoln Avenue. I'm speaking for the 26 landowners who are affected directly or indirectly by this development. A number of us are here, but we know that this has been a time-consuming kind of thing, so we've just agreed that I'll make a very brief statement. We were visited last night by Mr. Blue. Thank you very much for coming and talking with us. We understand that Project B, which is the Lincoln to 45 part of Olympian Drive, is no longer on the agenda. There's not money for it, so this is when we're assuming that's not happening. We're willing, in the spirit of compromise, to support the yellow option. I think you'll have this in your packet. Not that we're particularly enthusiastic about it, but we've said all along that we would like to support a compromise. Of course, we would like the yellow option to be as west as possible, but if you know the option that's there would be acceptable. We don't think the curly bit that comes back onto Olympian back onto Lincoln after Olympian is necessary, because it's just going to put big vehicles on a road that goes to nowhere with three houses and quite a narrow road. So we would our preference would be for it to end at Olympian. The green option and the red option since that's the original drawing was done, which was not last decade but the decade before, done in the 90s, a lot's changed there. There have been new houses built, including my house, including the Barron's house, so the character of the neighbourhood's changed. We would also like to mention that the yellow route affects two properties rather than six, which is a good thing, and I should have turned my phone off, shouldn't I? It involves, if you look, less fragmentation of fields, so that with the red option and the green option, there are fields which are broken into unusable pieces, so it makes more sense from that point of view. And also, if you don't do the curly bit at the top, it's shorter and therefore cheaper. So there are a number of reasons why, although it's not a great thing to be doing, we'd be willing to accept that as a reasonable compromise. And we want to thank very much the people who've worked on this, Jeff and his team for having done these drawings, and all the various people on the county board here that we've spoken to who've been active and constructive people in terms of coming up with a compromise. Again, we're assuming that Project B will never happen, won't be needed, and there won't be money for it. So that's the premise that our support for this compromise is based on. So thank you very much, folks, and thank you for your patience over all this time and for thinking about it, and thank you for all the group who've come again here tonight to be a voice in this discussion.
Mr. William Bates.
My name is William Bates, and I have farm property that is in the proximity in the development for Olympian Drive, and also have the entrance onto North Lincoln Avenue, which is the discussion here tonight. I am a neighbor of Shirley Squires, and she has asked me, because of her illness and some problems which she's been having, along with Christine Squire Pearson, who's an heir to the Ralph Squire farm, which will accommodate a lot of the North Lincoln Avenue acreage. And if these new developments, these new possibility routes are considered, practically, in fact, every one of them involves her property. So this is, I'm reading a letter on her behalf. It says, good evening, thank you for the county board for allowing a representative to read this letter. We would have preferred to attend in person, however, Mrs. Shirley Squires is currently providing medical care for her disabled son and Miss Christine Pearson, who has recently begun cancer treatments. We would like to first clarify how Squire Farms operates, as there seems to be some confusion on this particular subject. Squire Farms is not held in a trust. A farm management committee represents the farm, and the committee is made up of one representative from each of the three heir groups of the Richard Squire Sr. Each heir group owns an undivided third of the farm. Janet Charlo is the farm agent, not the farm manager, and as such does not represent Squire Farm. Since July 2009, it seems that all we have heard from the opposition group is that the Olympian Drive project would ruin some of the world's richest farmland. When interest was shown in 2010 for the Olympian project to be part of a project that included Lincoln Avenue, that too brought opposition for the same reason, from the same group. It seems they are willing to compromise on anything unless they are willing to compromise on anything unless it is to use the majority of Squire Farms as a way to save themselves and their personal property from being inconvenienced. Those included in the opposition party ready to throw the Squire Farms and all its rich farmland under the bus include Janet Charlo, who is the Squire Farm agent, Billy and Virginia Ziegler, who are tenants for the Squire's farm, and who are not, by the way, and who are, by the way, related to board member Al Nudo, who was appointed to the county board to serve on the county's special committee on this particular subject, and others we thought of as friends and neighbors. We would have thought that having Mr. Nudo on a committee that could benefit a relative would or should have been considered a conflict of interest. Let us be perfectly clear. We support the Olympian Drive project. We do so because we believe building this road is the right thing to do for the community. We don't mind giving up a few acres of land, a few acres of farm ground, if it will help build the community we have both considered home for our entire lives. We will also support the S-curve alignment for the North Lincoln Avenue Extension Project, which would also take a small partial of the Squire Farm. Again, we don't mind the sacrifice if it helps bring both projects to completion. In fact, Mrs. Squires has offered a small partial of her own land to the east of her homestead in the hopes that the S-curve alignment can be moved slightly to the northwest so that a neighbor would not lose any land in the alignment. Let us all make it clear that we are not in support of any alignment for the Lincoln Avenue extension that would take more than 5.2 acres previously proposed for the S-curve alignment, which was finished in 1997. Any new alignment being considered for Lincoln Avenue is being done to appease a group of seven selfish Johnny-come-lately families who, by their own admission, would not like nothing better than to see an end to both projects so that they are not inconvenienced in any way. It's funny, these are the same families who have admitted they knew of both road projects before they purchased their properties, but made the decision to buy regardless. In conclusion, we would like the County Board to know that we are certainly willing to do our part to bring these two road projects to fruition. We simply ask the Squires that Squire Farm not be expected to carry the sole burden. We ask you do also consider carefully whether or not you are willing to ask the area's oldest living resident, 82 years old, to also shoulder the burden of a road which would ruin her property just to appease a self-centered group of seven families. Sincerely, Shirley S. Squires, area resident since 1951, Christine Squire Pearson, heir to Ralph S. Squires, and representatives of two-thirds of the Squire Farm Management Committee.
Mr. Bates, your time's up.
Say again?
Your time is up.
Okay.
Mr. Robert Lakey?
Hi, I'm Robert Lakey. I live on 1214 East Olympian Road in Urbana, and I'm here because I'm very much in support of the project, and you know, we about beat this dead horse to death, and you know, it's very obvious what this means to the community, as you can see how Windsor Road has progressed and how that's been very much needed. We're not only now a two-lane road, we're a four-lane road, so it showed the need of the roads, and we've even went down on Church Street and remodeled that one. So why is not Urbana on the north side very, you know, capable of having something of this nature for the safety of getting across town and the need, because the traffic has definitely become more of a problem than everybody realizes. And, you know, we're in the process of talking about building a new school for Champaign Central, which is going to take 80 acres of land. And is anybody here concerned about that? I haven't heard anybody saying anything about it. And there's actually two proposed sites that is available that they're talking about, at least two to three sites on Olympian Drive. So those will connect Champaign Urbana, and the industry on that side of town is in very much in need of the transportation for not only just agriculture but industry itself. And I just think the whole project is very important, you know, of building and making it better for the whole community. Thank you.
Mr. John Dimmitt.
Good evening. I'm here representing the Economic Development Corporation and just want to remind you that the Economic Development Corporation is in favor of AXC for Olympian Drive. We leave the exact details to people that are smarter than us as to how that gets accomplished, but we want to make sure that you're aware that we are in need of that. The last time I appeared here, I was indicated that there was a major employer that has facilities on both sides of the railroad track that has a critical need for the completion of this traffic way. The first round of layoffs has been announced for that company in the form of early retirements. They have indicated that it's okay for me to tell you that local management is having difficulty keeping corporate management interested in continuing to invest in the Champaign-Urbana community. They're very worried about the stability of that company in terms of the workforce and the amount of people that are employed here. This is an issue of real jobs that are here now and not thinking about jobs that might show up later. And that is why the EDC is concerned that this traffic way be taken care of and be taken care of in the best way possible that meets the needs of all of the individuals that live up there, but also in all the units of government that have tried to work together to make it financially feasible to get this finished. That's it. Thank you.
Mr. Joe Lamb.
My name is Joe Lamb. I'm with Open Road Paving and Champaign Asphalt at 1414 West Anthony Drive in Urbana. And first and foremost, I want to say I'm a dear friend of Shirley Squire, for the record, and let that be known. I have been involved with this project since its inception in 1999. The city of Champaign and the city of Urbana since that time have worked diligently to relocate much of the industry that was scattered about the north side of town from Bradley and Oak Street north. Within the last 5 years, arrangements have been made to where all the industry that had existed on Oak Street since 1946 had been moved, remediated, and now an entire community, the Church of the Living God, is in control of it and are building homes, are building learning centers, and retail is even popping up in the area. As a result, Champaign Asphalt, Open Road, two of my competitors, Amosa Coat and Blager Concrete, have all moved up in this area, all with the design that we were going to have access. We've done it in great faith with the city of Champaign, the city of Urbana, and with great communication and coordination with the county. Much of the staking that's gone up there has been by or at the direction of this county board. We've gone up there, all of us have been there, and as a side note, we recycle more than any other product in this county by weight annually. We will continue to do so. To do that, we need trucking and we need road and we need access. We would never build a residential area, a residential neighborhood without any two-way access into it. Fire protection would never allow it. What we have up there is an area that's been greatly designed by city planners that do this for a living, and they've done it with great thought and care and consideration, and they've done it, as you heard earlier, from one of the biggest landowners up there over the last 20 years. In addition to that, there has been virtually no private work that's been bid here for the last 3 years. All the businesses that have moved up there in cooperation with these entities have done so betting on the come. We haven't had anything to do. The unions that were all signatory to do's hours have been down. I serve as a trustee on their pension funds. The hours in Champaign have not been lowered in over 12 years. It's time to follow through on what we've done. Thank you very much.
Tara McCauley.
Hi. Hi, I'm the union rep for the Champaign County employees. We're here tonight because we are in the process of negotiating a wage reopener in our contract. Our members took a wage freeze the first year of our contract with a reopener the second year. It's been since 2008 since the employees that we represent have had a raise. I'd like to read something from your budget for this fiscal year. The county board acknowledges partnership with its employees as one of the greatest strengths in coping through significant budget constraints that have been applied to operations in the last 2 years. The county's employees have worked with the county board exhibiting engagement and understanding of the fiscal challenges by accepting and or agreeing to wage freezes, particularly as that was a tool for safeguarding against additional layoffs or elimination of essential positions. The county board will continue to place priority on maintaining its high-quality workforce through its commitment to provide competitive wages and benefits to its employees. So this is one of your goals in your budget for this fiscal year, I'm reading. So we conducted a survey as we've been going through negotiations. Champaign County employees are not keeping up with the other county employees in this region. They are falling behind. The Department of Labor says that an average clerical employee in Champaign-Urbana makes approximately $32,000. Champaign County clerical employee makes an average of $27,000 right now. That's more than a $4,000 difference with comparable clericals in this city, non-county employees. The cost of living in the U.S. has gone up more than 4% since the last time our members had a raise. And, you know, we were told at negotiations that the county can only afford a small package for our members. The members have steps. I think the county board understands that we have wage steps that the employees have counted on for years. Your proposal is to take away most of those steps. We don't think that's fair. We also don't think it's fair that there are administrative and managerial employees who have gotten upgrades and raises since 2008 while our members have gone without. The lawyer, you hire an outside attorney to represent you who has offended our members several times. She told them that if what you're offering is not fair, you know, if employees can't afford to pay their bills off what the county is offering, that they should just get a roommate. And she said that, you know, that when we were talking about longevity and how the employees value step increases, you know, for longevity, that county employees aren't really valuable after 5 years because really by then you've been caught up to speed on what you need to know, and past that, really you're not of any value, so why would we value you enough to pay you more for your longevity? And so this is the person you guys are spending $280 an hour on to negotiate on your behalf to your employees, and the amount of money you are paying her already, I'm sure, would have funded more than one employee's raise based on what we're proposing in our proposal. So, we think that with that type of rhetoric going on at the bargaining table and the type of proposal you're giving us where you want to take away steps that the employees expect, people are pretty frustrated. And, you know, I think shame on you, the county board, because you are the one sending these representatives to negotiate with us. You made a decision, I assume, to hire this person to insult your employees. And I say you need to do something about it. You know, we're told at the table we don't have authority from the county board to pay you any more than this. The county board thinks that you shouldn't have wage steps, that it was a mistake that they ever gave it to you. So, you know, I think the county employees are tired of waiting. They've been waiting since 2008. They deserve more than what you're offering them. I hope you'll do the right thing and reconsider what you're putting on the table. And we think that if you can afford money for a lot of the projects you're working on, that you can afford to put more money into your resource, your employees, who are the frontline people making the county work. So we hope that you will do that.
Patty Wall, please.
I'm Patty Walls. And Terry, you stole half my thunder. I understand times are hard, and I was resigned to no raise again for 2.5 years. I was glad just to have a job and health insurance, but that was until I heard that our county lawyer said that if we were having trouble making ends meet, that we should get a roommate. That's a degrading comment that did not need to be made. And perhaps they have room in their home, we can come room with him. Her. I also heard that this same department head on the negotiating committee commented that no one here deserves a raise. Most of us here have been here longer than 5 years, and we haven't learned anything new. That comment's also degrading. I don't know how it is in her office, but I work in the supervisor of assessments office. It's rare for any day to go by that we don't learn something new. We have a comment that we always make that when something new comes up, well, it wasn't a wasted day. I learned something new today. And it's true. Constant changes in legislation to many areas in our office bring new forms, requirements, etc. all the time. I'm an employee who has been here nearly 14 years. And you can ask my boss or someone who comes to the counter or who calls in for help if they would like to have someone helping them with longevity and knowledge about the job, or someone who's new to the job and worked there less than 5 years. I feel that the longevity of my job is worth something. Thank you.
Mr. John Carney. Let's go with Nora Stewart then. We'll come back to John.
Good evening. Let me introduce myself. My name is Nora Stewart. I am the president of ASME Local 900, representing the employees of Champaign County, your employees. I stand before you tonight hurt, disheartened, appalled, and upset by the recent comments made by Lorna Guiler, a private attorney hired by you, the county board, as your representative, during a contract reopener at a rate of $280 an hour. Because we, your employees, feel we deserve a fair wage for a fair day's work. We have been belittled by the comments, if you've worked for an employer over 5 years, you're not worth much to them. Is this what the county thinks of its employees? Or the most recent comment, if you can't afford your living expenses, then I suggest you get a roommate. Well, if I was making $280 an hour, I wouldn't need to get a roommate. The negotiation team has sat at the negotiating table with management with open minds and offered ideas used by the management to help with the financial crisis the board has faced. Not once have I read in the paper or heard over the news giving the employees any type of credit for working with management. Do you realize that the budget is balanced on the back of your bargaining unit employees? We have bargaining unit employees who have voluntarily cut their hours, changed their insurance plan, gone without raises for 3 years, doubled, and some have tripled up on their daily workloads, and even went and accepted furlough days. We've tightened our belt until we can't breathe. I thought we were in this together, but from the recent comments made by your representative and recent upgrades of some of your non-binding union employees, I see I was sadly mistaken. All we are asking for is a fair wage for a fair day's work.
Mr. Farney. Mr. John Farney. Is Mr. Farney. Oh, there you are. Which one of you is Mr. Farney?
He's the real Mr. Farney. That little one's speaking.
I wanted to introduce Nate to Santa Claus in his off time. See him in the back row? He's got the white hair there. Okay.
The rich guy.
Well, thanks for letting me address you. My name is John Farney. I'm Vice President of ASME Local 900, and I'm also speaking about wage negotiations that are going on. It's important that wage steps that have appeared in previous contracts continue into the future. Champaign County worked hard over the past 4 years to bring employee wages to levels comparable to counties, other counties for similar work. And we don't want to see Champaign County fall behind again, and that was a problem in the past. Having competitive wages helps to recruit good employees to Champaign County government and to retain well-trained and experienced employees who are already here. bargaining unit employees have worked with administration to get through our recent financial difficulties. Concessions on health insurance resulted in savings to the county. Layoffs and furloughs also resulted in savings. And while at times working through these difficulties have been painful, we've all survived. The gap between management's most recent proposal and AFSCME's most recent proposal is not an insurmountable amount. It's approximately $80,000. The main difference between these proposals is management's desire to change from the current step schedule to a two-step schedule. Why do I say that $80,000 is not an insurmountable amount when Champaign County has been besieged by budget woes? Well, the proof is in the budget numbers that your administration put forward and the actions of this board. First County Administration often focuses on the general corporate fund balance with the goal of seeing that fund at 12.5% of the general corporate fund budget. Historically, the balance has not ended at 12.5%. In fact, according to your 2011 budget, in 10 of the last 17 years, the general corporate fund has ended below that 12.5% threshold. It is not the norm to be at 12.5%. Fiscal year 2011 budget projections also show that the corporate fund, general corporate fund balance will end at 6.59%. That's a percent or a little more increase over last year. The $80,000 difference between proposals could be taken from that fund balance, resulting in a final projected balance of 6.33%, still an improvement over fiscal year 2010. Another option this board should look at, or ask administration to pursue, is the repayment of a $330,000 loan from the general corporate fund to the Champaign County Nursing Home. According to the 2011 budget document, the nursing home fund shows a balance of $926,000 for fiscal year 2010 and projected balance of $425,000 for fiscal year 2011. County Treasurer Dan Welch's report to last month's Finance Committee. I'm almost done. Pies will tell me when I'm done, okay? The January 18th committee report showed a balance of $246,000 on December 31, 2010. These numbers show that it's time for the nursing home to start making payments on this loan.
Go see her.
Yeah. The $80,000 difference between the proposals could be accomplished by having the nursing home to start repaying its debt to the general corporate fund. It doesn't have to be a full amount today, but building in debt repayment is a must in order to be financially stable. This board has also made decisions in the past year that could have brought both sides closer to the goal of a fair wage and longevity recognition. One decision that I believe has negatively impacted the county's finances was the April 6, 2010 committee of the whole vote to support the extension of the University Avenue TIF district. This TIF district, which has been in existence for 23 years and had not accomplished its goals during that time, has been extended. As Mr. Richards pointed out in that meeting, that's up to $100,000 a year in revenue to the county that you made the conscious decision that you did not need. We now see that decisions such as that have dire consequences. It should also be noted that during the last year, this board authorized position upgrades and raises to non-bargaining staff, including elected officials. 17 new employees received raises totaling $51,000, an average increase of over $3,000 a person. AFSCME's wage proposal results in a wage increase for more than 150 employees of just over $1,400. Why such a disparity? Both bargaining and non-bargaining unit employees have seen cuts, layoffs, and furloughs. Everyone's seeing an increased workload, and they deserve to see the wages increase as such. But more than double for one class of employees. The county board's action in awarding these large increases to non-bargaining employees while playing hardball with the bargaining unit employees has hurt employee morale and damaged relationships between bargaining unit members, non-bargaining unit members, and this board. Finally, I'd like to address the comments of the county's legal counsel during the course of negotiations. Everyone at the bargaining table is adults. We all understand we need to live within our rooms. We don't need to be told it. You don't need to be told it. At $280 an hour, if that's the advice you're getting ripped off. The final comments that the county's legal counsel made about bargaining unit employees needing to get a roommate when confronted with financial difficulties than trying to provide adequate shelter on county employees' wages were unnecessary, unprofessional, and belittled your employees. I felt bad that management, people that work with us every day, had to sit there and hear that, because I know that Ms. Busey and the members of this board don't believe that. And to be getting advice for $280 an hour from someone who says, get a roommate, it's not the type of representation that you want to pay for. Finally, I ask that the board please work with us and resolve this quickly, because we need to move forward. Employees need to be able to earn a fair wage for a full day's work. Thank you.
Is there further public participation? Okay, we'll close it. Next item is communications from the board. Any items here, Ms. Petrie?
Yes, I just wanted to share with the whole board that Mr. Kurds, Eric Thorsland, and I spent all day yesterday at a wind energy seminar that was held in Normal, and we've come away with a bounty full of new information concerning that type of green energy.
Mr. Coates.
Thank you. I was also in attendance at the Wind Farm Conference in Bloomington Normal yesterday. I just have, we met with Mr. Dwight Farber of Horizon and Mr. Greg Lutman of InverEnergy. Today, Mr. Lutman was in Champaign at the Highway Department to discuss road agreements with County Road Commissioners and Mr. Jeff Blue, and I'm happy to say that there seemed to be movement forward, and we're looking good on wind farms, perhaps, in the near future. Thank you.
Any other communications? Okay, we'll move on to areas of interest, highway and transportation. Ms. Corbett?
Good evening. The Highway and Transportation Committee. First item of business is the monthly report for the county and township motor fuel tax claim for January 2011. I need a motion to accept and place on file. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The next thing is the report from the county engineer.
Good evening. First item on the agenda is an intergovernmental agreement between the village of Gifford and Champaign County. And I put a map at your desk. And this is a project that the last board meeting that was approved, you'll see the one that has the big project limits in the middle. This is the project that we talked about at the last board meeting, and we have a resolution on file to fund. We're going to be milling and overlaying County Roads 11 and County Road 32 from Thomas Boyle through the village of Gifford, and actually going a couple of miles north of the village of Gifford with this project. This is a project that will be done during the summer of 2011. Just as an FYI, this is a $4 million road project, and I just found out on Tuesday that we received $3.1 million in federal aid and $900,000 in state grant. So this is going to be a project that will not cost the taxpayers of Champaign County directly from the highway fund one single dime to complete. So this is a $4 million project that we are able to find other funding sources in order to fund. The caveat to this project is if you're going to use federal aid dollars, there's all kinds of rules that go along with those. We've talked about that in the past. And one of those caveats is that when you pass through a community such as Gifford or any other smaller community where the county highway goes immediately down the center of the town and is basically their main street, there are rules that you have to follow. And one of those rules that FHWA has for using their money is that there shall be no angular parking along the county highway as it's going through town. So therefore, in order for us to use that money and go through the village of Gifford, it would actually mean that the village of Gifford would have to give up all of their downtown parking and go to parallel parking along the curb instead of their angular parking, which in essence means they would be surrendering roughly 50% of their parking in the downtown area. When that little tidbit of information came to our attention, we approached the village of Gifford and talked to them about different options that we would have in order to be able to complete the project, but yet be able to work with the village of Gifford in order to make sure that we're meeting their needs as well. And basically, the intergovernmental agreement on page 26 and 27 is what we have negotiated with the village of Gifford. They are willing to take jurisdictional transfer of Main Street through the village of Gifford, which is basically a one-mile section of roadway through the heart of town, for the short period of time that we go ahead and do the federal aid project through Gifford. At the time that the project is completed, the roadway would be transferred back to Champaign County. Basically, we're doing an end run around to get away from the federal regulations through Gifford. So they will accept the jurisdictional transfer agreement that they have already signed at their village board meeting, and will be for signature for Chair Rival, hopefully after the board meeting next week. And at some point in the future, as this intergovernmental agreement says, they will have two options in the village of Gifford. After we accept the roadway back as a jurisdictional transfer back, so it means it comes back onto the county highway system, we can either go back into the village of Gifford and use motor fuel tax monies in order to do the road work that we were going to do through there, which is basically a mill and overlay through town. But they had some serious issues with drainage in their downtown area where they get some flooding in some of their businesses, and they had some road issues downtown. With motor fuel tax funds, there's more constraints in using that money to do drainage improvements in their downtown area. Basically, we can do drainage improvements along the roadway and help them put pipes underneath the immediate main street and put in inlets in order to capture the water, but once the water leaves the right-of-way of Main Street, motor fuel tax funds can no longer be expended in order to help them out. Now, one of the good things of using federal funds is that if they lose their parking and if they can find someplace along downtown area where there's an empty lot, there's a dilapidated building that they want to tear down, the federal money will actually pay to build a parking lot to replace those parking spots that they lost downtown. Obviously, that doesn't happen between now and July. That's a process that takes 18 months or so by the time you do appraisals on the property, make sure the property is big enough, design the property, that kind of thing. Also, federal dollars can be used in order to not only put pipes and the inlets in the street, but we can also use federal funds to actually take that water out of town, put it underground in pipes and take it to an outlet outside of town. So basically, their two options are You can keep your anger at parking. We'll come back in with water fuel tax funds and overlay the roadway. You really never know we were there except for that you'll have a new surface on your roadway. Or you can lose your anger at parking. You can find a spot to replace that parking in a parking lot, which we would be able to use federal funds to construct. And we can also do a good job of helping you get your water problems out of downtown. So we put that in an intergovernmental agreement, giving them the option to choose one of those two because they're not sure which way they want to go. They're going to have village meetings, talk to their downtown business owners, talk to their constituents and see which way they would like to go in order to get the best bang out of this project as they can. But the bottom line is, for now, they're going to jurisdictionally transfer the road, and we will jurisdictionally transfer it back to them after the project is complete, and then at some time in the future, probably 2, 3, 4 years down the line, we'll come back and do a project on their behalf in town in order to do what we would have been able to do had we had the time with this money that we have now. So there's a jurisdictional transfer. There's also a county resolution which provides for the deletion of County Highway 32 through the village of Gifford. There's a municipal ordinance that they've already passed providing for the addition of County Highway 32, and then there's a jurisdictional transfer for us to receive it back. And all these items would be signed at one time and attached to the intergovernmental agreement.
I need a motion. Second. Pius. Okay, it's open for discussion. Okay, Michael.
What exactly is contract 91453? Maybe I'm confused, but the way I'm reading this is we are giving this road to them, and when they give it back, then give it back to us, then either option one or option two is going to happen?
That's correct.
So so then what is the contract signed for?
That is the actual paving project from Thomas Boyle through the village of Gifford and going on north.
Okay.
That's IDOT contract number that's attached to it.
So that's going to happen, and then it's going to come back to us, and then one of the two options is going to happen.
You're correct.
Okay. Yes.
Jonathan?
Ted, has a city of Gifford done any preliminary engineering studies on what they're going to need for stormwater removal?
We have a study that's probably 5 years old. They know what they need to do. Obviously, the costs have to be updated. But they had two different options. One of them went south out of town, which would not work as far as our federal highway. What they have to do is, if we're going to use federal money, they have to take it. They can't cut through a hill and take the water in a different direction. They have to use, you know, whatever the drainage of the water getting out of town would normally be. So they actually have two engineering options that they've had their engineer look at. One of them was taking it south out of town down to a retention pond, and one of them was taking it east out of town to a ditch or a tile outlet that the water would go into. And the one that goes out east out of town is actually follows the natural flow of the water, and that's the one. And it was about $400,000, but there were a lot of miscellaneous items in there that we would not be able to pay for. For instance, if it takes a 24-inch pipe to transport the water off of Main Street out of town, and they run that pipe down their city streets, and as that pipe propagates down their city streets, they put other inlets in, and now that pipe needs to be 36 inches, we can't pay for the upsizing. All we can pay for is the amount of pipe that is needed to get the water out of downtown off of Main Street. So there was some monies in there that that were actually not for the Main Street project, but actually to upsize the pipe and put in additional inlets.
It doesn't seem to be very logical for us to do a project where we're piping water to nowhere. Is there some way to coordinate with them to where they have the funds that if this project does go the way it seems it's going to go, that they're able to proceed, I guess, to the east and finish your job and get it to an outlet somewhere?
Right. Yeah, I would. I mean, they have a village engineer. I can't talk on behalf of their village. You know, I can talk on behalf of the county highway, but obviously we will be working with their village engineer to make sure they have a good plan before we proceed with any kind of project like this.
And what would be the timetable for completion on this project?
It's at least 2 years after they begin the process before we would probably see anything come to fruition. So that's a minimum. I'd say the next 2 to 5 years.
Thank you.
Okay. Fred?
My first question is, because I don't know a lot about the hitches that come from these kind of intergovernmental agreements and trading back and forth. In your experience, what are some of the problems that do tend to surface down the line?
With this one, with it being such a short time span, I mean, they're going to have the road for a year. The only problem I can see might be for them. We have agreed to do snow and ice control on the roadway regardless of its jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
They were worried about, you know, what if a gigantic pothole shows up while we have jurisdiction, while they have jurisdiction of it. The roadway is actually in pretty good shape, so I don't foresee any major maintenance problems on that roadway for them over the next year. Obviously, if that happened, we wouldn't leave them hanging out to dry. We would help them out. But from our side of the thing, I don't think there is any downfall, except that we have to go through the paperwork in order to make it happen.
Okay, and then just a comment so it's on the record. Unfortunately, this is a project that will be 2 or 4 years down the line, and there's much advancement on how you handle stormwater management, which I've learned now with the John Street project, and some of that should be considered when they get to the design of how, if they choose to go that way, to handle the water and the removal, which is much less costly than what you just quoted.
Thank you.
John?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Jeff, is the whole project going to be 2 to 4 years away, or are you going to be able to do the overlay on the rest of it before then?
The rest of it's going to be done this summer.
Very good.
From Thomas Burrow on to it.
Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Okay. Next item on the agenda, listed as Lincoln Avenue, Olympian Drive. And I'm going to try to go through this as efficiently as I can, but yet try to cover all the bases of basically going back in time to the Olympian Drive, Lincoln Avenue Special Committee meeting of November the 10th of 2010. That was the last meeting that was held of that special committee. And at that meeting, the committee agreed, at least it reads in the minutes, that the purpose and need of the Olympian Drive project over the tracks and connecting to Lincoln Avenue was a valid purpose and need of a project. We also stated, and you can read it in the meeting, the meeting minutes, that they would like to see a compromise made that would have lesser impact on the property owners affected by the project. And I'd just like to read the motion that was made by Mr. Knott, so that we're clear on what direction was given to me coming out of the meeting of November the 10th. And that motion was to ask Blue to interact with various parties and come back to the county board, perhaps by February 1st, to report his progress to see if there can be a breakthrough on some of the details. Webb asked not to define the various parties and not said Blue should interact with the landowners or their appointed representatives on the legal or engineering side, IDOT, the Illinois Commerce Commission, and his colleagues from the City of Urbana and the City of Champaign. The motion was seconded by Nuno, and it was voted on unanimously, and basically after conversations after that, the committee, the special committee, was dissolved by Chair Weibel. He seen that there was no other business that they needed to take on at the time. So at that meeting, Jason Berkman, lawyer, was representing the landowners group that Mr. Cope stood up and represented tonight. And based on the motion by Mr. Knott, I made contact with Mr. Berkman and began to start a dialogue on, you know, what we needed to do in order to try to fulfill the needs of the committee. I also contacted Shirley Squire, who you heard a letter was read tonight from her, because she's the other major property owner in the area, although she's one-third of the group that has Squire Farms, and it's and one of the other thirds of that group is represented by Mr. Berkman, so there's some crossover there in that Squire Farms property. But she and her sister, her niece, Chris, are two-thirds undivided interest in the Squire Farms. When I contacted Shirley, being that it was kind of the holiday season, she asked me if I could please get a hold of her after the holidays, because she had lots of family and friends staying in her house and didn't have the time in order to meet. So immediately after the holidays on January the 6th of this year, Jason Berkman and I went out to Shirley's house and met with her for some 4 hours. Sat around her table, talked to her about everything from 1997 to the present. During that meeting, in the beginning, she was adamantly opposed to any alignment of Lincoln Avenue that wasn't the proposed alignment, which is shown as green on your map. But after we talked with her for those 4 hours, at the end, when we were getting ready to leave, she did say that she would be open to discussions of a westerly alignment, so an alignment that would go to the west of her homestead between her house and the railroad tracks, if the people that are represented by Mr. Berkman would be open to discussions of continuing Olympian Drive, not only to Lincoln Avenue, but all the way over to Route 45, because she has always been a strong supporter of both the Lincoln Avenue connection as well as Route 45 connection with Olympian Drive. She phrased this from the standpoint of similar standpoint that she put in her letter tonight. She said that if Squire Farms is going to take the burden of Lincoln Avenue pretty much completely upon our farm, then the burden should also be shared with other folks along the Olympian Drive corridor in order to complete the project. She said, this is a project for the community. If I'm willing to have the burden placed on me and make some concessions, I believe that the people who are represented by Mr. Berkman need to make the same concessions. So after that meeting, Jason and I stood out in the driveway for a few minutes and talked about what she had said in that meeting. And Mr. Berkman said that he was going to go back to his group and, I guess for lack of better words, extend the olive branch to the group that Shirley had extended during that meeting. And I said, okay, based on this meeting, and one of the other things that Shirley had inquired about in the meeting is, she stood at her back door and said, how far away would the roadway be? I really need a map, which was kind of the first sign of, okay, besides the committee wanting a map, I didn't feel comfortable going out and drawing a map that put a roadway directly in the way of somebody's property without having a personal conversation with them about it. So now I've had that conversation with Shirley. I told Jason now I will direct the engineers to take the line that was basically drawn by BKB Engineering and presented to the Olympian Drive Special Committee and put it on an aerial photo such as you have in front of you that would represent basically that westerly alignment. And as the engineers were making that that engineering drawing of the green line and the yellow line, it became apparent that there may be another option, which is that red line, and we can talk about that a little bit later, but I just wanted you to know that that map in front of you has three separate alignments on it, and I will kind of come back to those here a little bit farther down the line. Some days went by. On January the 17th, so it's 11 days after the meeting with Shirley, I received an email after my email I sent to Jason prompting him and asking him about if he had had any conversations with the folks that he represented. And Mr. Berkman emailed me back and said he believed that the committee's direction to me was to develop a westerly alignment, whereas the minutes read that the direction to me was to open up conversations about, you know, what we could possibly do as a compromise. And he advised his clients at that time not to take any further action on Shirley's offer. So Shirley extended that offer. She asked Mr. Berkman to come back with a response from that group. At this time in this email, he offered that his clients were not going to take any further action on Shirley's offer. There were a couple other emails that were traded back and forth, and then on January the 28th, received an email from Jason that said that his client, he would no longer be representing his clients in this matter, that they would prefer if we correspond with them directly as individuals instead of to him as the representative of those individuals. So we've kind of gone from one representative to the next, and now there's not a representative of that landowner group that I was aware of that I was supposed to be communicating with. So on February 3rd, which is the next week, with that map in hand that you have in front of you, Bill Gray, Mike Munson, and I went out and talked to Shirley Squire to, you know, appraise her of the different alternatives that were drawn on that map. As you could probably tell from her letter that she wrote tonight, she prefers the green alignment. Her reason is that you know, that green alignment was chosen by the people that lived in that area. She obviously was out there at that time along with some of her other family members. She had a lot of stake. She put a lot of time and heart and effort into that alignment, and that's the alignment that she would prefer. She does not like the red alignment, and she basically reiterated her point about the yellow alignment, that she would be open to talking or thinking about it if there was some openness from the other group about possibly extending Olympian Drive to the east. As Mr. Koch said in his public participation, I met with the landowner group last night. I showed them the map that you have before you. As he spoke, they are not in favor of the red or the green alignment and would prefer the yellow alignment But they would prefer that that yellow alignment be stopped basically at the Olympian Drive intersection, and that there be no continuation of the S-curve to hook up with Lincoln Avenue to the north of Olympian Drive. So, based on the direction that I received from the special committee, I believe I've basically got through what they asked me to do. So, where does that leave us, and where do we go from here? So, let me kind of lay out where I think that we're at now that the special committee is dissolved and I've taken their direction and hopefully fulfilled what they were asking me to do over the last couple of months. I made reference to the map a few times, and I want to start with that handout. You'll see there are three alignments on that map: green, red, and yellow. The green alignment is an alignment which is the approved alignment from the 1999 study. You can see down in the bottom right-hand corner the property owners that alignment impacts, as well as the amount of acres that are impacted upon their property. You'll see that the total impact of new right-of-way that needs to be purchased or in some way made part of the roadway is roughly 12.6 acres. excuse me. That new alignment, or the approved alignment, obviously leaves Lincoln Avenue at its point of terminus right now, and hooks back up with what is the current alignment of the rail and chip Lincoln Avenue project just near the northwest corner of the Cope property there, and then follows the existing line alignment on up to Olympian Drive, where there would be an intersection with Olympian Drive. The red alignment is one that actually, when they did the location study and went through all the engineering, and they had the spaghetti string of different alignments along the corridor, the red alignment was actually the alignment that came out of the engineering study as the preferred alignment. Now, that alignment was taken to public meetings. At those public meetings, it was adjusted down to the green alignment. So basically, they brought the red alignment to the public meetings, and through public input and through the processes that you use, it was shifted down to the green alignment. So if you look at the spaghetti string of alignments that I'm sure some of you have seen, the green alignment really isn't on that spaghetti string of alignments. It was the red alignment that came out of the Phase 1 design study and through public participation got shifted down to the green alignment. So that red alignment does actually represent an alignment that was studied through the Phase 1 document. And if you see down on the bottom again, it kind of probably shows up more pinkish than it does red in the approximate right-of-way acres. There are four property owners that show up as owning property on the red alignment, and a total of 13.6 acres of new acquired right-of-way in order to build that alignment. The yellow alignment is an adaptation of the westerly alignment that was brought to the Olympian Lincoln Avenue Committee by BKB Engineering, which is an engineering group that was working on behalf of the landowners group. It goes directly north off of the current Lincoln Avenue terminus, and you'll see it goes to the west of the Shirley Squire homestead, and then meets up with what would be the Olympian Drive's approved alignment, roughly 1,250 feet west of the Lincoln Avenue intersection as you see it on the green. So between the green line and the yellow line, you're looking at roughly about 1,250 feet. That particular alignment, as you see, crosses over four different property owners. The majority of the property is owned by Squire Farms. You'll see a discrepancy there in the total amount of acreage for the yellow. It shows an 18.6. Mind you that that 18.6 goes all the way up past north, north of Olympian Drive and hooks back into Lincoln Avenue. So, I think it's about a coin flip between the red, the green, and the yellow getting from Lincoln Avenue up to Olympian Drive.
How much of the yellow above north of Olympian is included in the 18-point?
All of it. How much? That's a good answer, isn't it? I don't have that exact figure out, but I can tell you that the numbers are very similar between the three locations. I mean, they're starting at the same point and ending at Olympian Drive. So the total amount of acreage on the yellow one is going to be slightly higher than the green and the red simply because it never follows the existing alignment of Lincoln Avenue. So we don't have that advantage of using existing Lincoln Avenue. But it does show there at 18.6, but I would imagine it would be slightly higher than the red one, probably in that 14-acre range by the time it gets up to Olympian Drive. So, looking at those three different alignments, and you can see up there, it may be hard to see, but up in the upper left-hand corner, there are some distances from the Charlotte household as well as the Squire household to those different alignments. Written on there, and if you get out your glasses, you can probably see those. But you can see those distances there. I don't think I need to go over each one of those, but those are obviously there for the reason of knowing what the proximity of these different corridors are to the different homesteads. So, obviously, with three separate alignments, there are different things that need to happen in order for these alignments to come to fruition, and someday there to be a road out there called Lincoln Avenue that follows one of these alignments. The green alignment has been through the phase one study. It's been approved. There's no additional location work that needs to be done. We could basically move ahead with design for a project that would follow the green alignment. The red alignment, although it came out of a phase one study, would have to be reevaluated through a kind of an amendment to that phase one study. It wouldn't be a full-blown phase one study in order to look at something that was already looked at back in 1999. It went through part of the process, but obviously since it wasn't chosen as the end-all approved alignment, there were some of the ending processes that that alignment didn't go through. So it would have to go through a partial phase one reevaluation. The engineers have estimated that in order to do that work, to put an alignment such as the red alignment through, that would be about $120,000 price tag in order to do that. The yellow alignment, or any alignment that basically isn't the red or the green alignment, so any line that you want to draw on this map that hasn't been studied before would basically mean starting anew with a location study or a phase one study to evaluate the alternatives. Basically, the engineers have estimated that a new phase one study to evaluate all the alternatives would be about $170,000 in order to complete the new phase one study. Now, I referred to that as evaluating the yellow line, maybe. But what it really means is that, you know, the yellow line is just a line on a piece of paper right now. And we can't do an evaluation or a study or a phase one design to evaluate one particular alignment. If we go back into a phase one evaluation of an alignment study, basically we're going to start with a new system of spaghetti strings through that area and see which one, you know, gets through the process, has the least environmental impacts, land impacts, home impacts, which one gets through the public participation and that kind of thing. So it's not just, we can do, you know, I can't say that we can just do a design phase and the yellow line will come out of that design phase, because it has to be worked through the process. And I don't know, sitting here today, what exact alignment would come out of a process such as that. So, but basically, if you boil all that down, leaves you with three options. Option one is use the approved alignment, which is the green alignment. Option two is reevaluate the alternatives from the previous location study, and literally the only alternative that holds any water anymore is the red alignment. Or you can start a new study and look at all different alternatives which may come out of that study. Whether it be red, yellow, green, purple, whatever color comes out of that study, it would be starting afresh. And basically they would take the terminus of Lincoln Avenue on up to Olympian Drive and figure out the best corridor in which to build a roadway based on the landowners that are living out there now, the best thing for the transportation community, as well as all the environmental impacts and everything else that are evaluated through a phase one study. So let me just talk a little bit about the timeline that I've handed out. It's kind of a bar chart here that I've handed out to y'all. The Olympian Drive project is in the plan for 2013 with the Illinois Commerce Commission. So that means that FY 2013, somewhere in that fiscal year, there needs to be a bid for the Olympian Drive project. And their fiscal year runs July 1 to July 1, just like the state's fiscal year does. So it needs, the Olympian Drive project needs to be bid before July 1st. So based on the bar chart, if you see here on the bar chart, you'll see the kind of bubble to the top that says December of 2012, a targeted approval date for a North Lincoln Avenue location study, assuming that we would move ahead with a new location study. That would give us enough time in order to take that location study, make sure that the intersection of Olympian Drive and Lincoln Avenue is appropriate, and IDOT could approve it, and we could get the plans to IDOT for the Olympian Drive project in time to have a letting during the 2013 fiscal year. So if you back that up, and you'll see that orange chart, or the orange bar on the bar graph, engineers estimate that it's about an 18-month process in order to go through a new phase one study. So you're back 18 months out of that, and you basically need to begin a phase one study, if that's the direction that we had, in March of this year. Because I know that doesn't equate to 18 months, but once it goes through the board, there has to be a joint agreement that is sent to IDOT that has to go to Springfield, and it takes time to get those agreements signed, and the engineers cannot begin work on a project such as this without a joint agreement that goes through IDOT. So if we were going to relook at the Lincoln Avenue corridor. A decision needs to be made sometime by the end of March so that we can proceed with getting that project going and online. I also handed out a spreadsheet that shows the costs for the North Lincoln Avenue project. And I think this will be of great interest to you. And it kind of goes along with the map that shows, I don't know if everybody's familiar with which project A, B, C, and X are, so I printed out a map so that everybody's on the same page as to what those letters represent as far as project goes. But the good news is that the funding for Project A is 100% funded at this time without any local dollars going into the project. You'll see a $15 million price tag with the ICC money at $9 million, the Illinois Jobs Now money, which is the bonding money, at $4 million, and STU money, which is CUAT's money, at $2 million. Adding that up gets to be to the $15 million price tag, so there's no local match that is required out of the pockets of directly from the highway fund or the motor fuel tax fund in Champaign County. The reason we can do that is that we can use the Illinois Jobs Now money in order to match the STU money, because federal aid doesn't really care where the matching funds come from as long as they're not other federal funds. So we can use the Illinois Jobs Now money in order to for the 50% match of the STU dollars. And quickly, just moving down, well, I'll come back to Project X, but moving down to Project C, which is the westerly hookup of Duncan Road to Olympian Drive, you'll see that one has no local dollars that we have to match either in order to complete that project. So you're getting projects A and C without local dollars going into the project. Now, funding for Project X, you'll see that there is $1.4 million in STU and a local match of $2.2 million. And the reason why that local match is a little higher, you would think if it's a 50% match, it would be $1.4 million and $1.4 million. The reason those numbers don't equate to each other is that federal dollars cannot be used for Phase 2 and Phase 3 engineering or right-of-way acquisitions. So the local match not only has to match the STU dollars, but it also has to pick up the Phase 2 and 3 engineering as well as the right-of-way acquisition in order to build Project X. So you see, bottom line is we're at about a $20 million total price tag with about $2 million of local match. So it's a, you know, we're getting $10 for every $1 that we're spending on a project like this. And, you know, that's a significant, obviously, advantage. We had talked about in the past we were going to need to get money from Tim Johnson's office in order to complete this project, but there was some monies that came through from the Federal Highway Administration to IDOT this year that we were able to allocate to this project. That's why that STU money got allocated to the project. So we no longer are trying to find excess money, you know, as you know, something that would be tagged on to a new federal aid bill. This is real money that we're not having to go out and ask for, that will be programmed through these different agencies. So I guess that being pretty much everything that I wanted to information that I wanted to give to you tonight, I would ask that, and I talked to Chair Weibel about this, And he said there wouldn't be, since there's no motion items on the agenda, that there wouldn't be any vote of any kind tonight. But I would ask that this board, at its next opportunity, take the same action that the Olympian Drive Lincoln Avenue subcommittee took, and basically reaffirm in some kind of manner, whether it be a vote or what have you, that the purpose and need for the projects, in particular the projects A, X, and C, the purpose and need is valid for the projects, so that we don't have to worry about whether or not we believe there is a legitimate reason to build this project, but we move on to, you know, how would Project X actually get developed. And along with that, I would like to ask if the board would make a motion of support of the existing report and alignment of Project A, so that we know, regardless of what happens with Project X, that there's a line out there that is called Project A that is actually going to be Olympian Drive that we need to hook up with along Lincoln Avenue. So those are basically your options. You can support the approved alignment. You can reevaluate and the design study options, or you can start a new design study. Now, the funding for either one of those options, where it's going to cost, whether it be $120,000 to reevaluate the design study, or $170,000 to start a new design study, those options are fundable with CUAT's money to a 50% match. So half of 120 is 60,000, half of 170 is 85,000. That would have to go through the CUAT's board and the policy committee and be approved as a project that they would like to fund. So if that were to happen, you're looking at needing, you know, either $60,000 or $85,000 from some funding source in order to be able to fund a reevaluation or a reopening of a phase one study. So I know that's a lot of information. It took me a long time just to put it in my brain. I was going to explain this all to you, and I know you have questions, so I can try to answer those to the best of my ability. Now.
Okay, you got Lloyd, then John, and then Al.
Hey, Raph. Let Raph.
Okay, Raph. Okay, John.
Jeff, and Project A, does that get us the estimated cost, that total cost, is that going to get us over to the green or to the yellow or to any of those?
The estimated cost for Project A gets you to the green line. That was because that is the approved alignment. That's the alignment that they use for estimating purposes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Al.
I just want to make a couple of comments, and if we could kind of look at the maps together. I'm trying to understand why the green line for development purposes is the primary goal here. I'm just looking at, if you take Shirley Squires' property as the center point, okay, and you take a look at the L-shaped, in other words, to the south, west, and south and northwest, and then coming over to Lincoln, that L-shape above and to the side, to the west, is the most developable. I'm thinking of Urbana now. I'm trying to make sure you guys get employment and jobs and that kind of thing. That's the most developable area. If you take a look below Shirley's place to the south, where the green line goes, you've got residences, you've got other impediments to development. Now, let's just say that, yes, you can still do all that L-shape, and everybody, once that, let's take an Apollo subdivision there, and everything gets grown around that L-shape, you're going to have to come to, at some point, you're going to come to Olympia in the north, but at some point, you got to come over to the green to do that, and you're going to impose industrial, commercial on the other side of the road, which is all residential. If you look at the yellow line, it splits the developable properties, which is better transportation for that Apollo type subdivision. And so for the life of me, I don't understand why we want to impose the sweeping S and put those kinds of impediments on economic growth. And that's the only thing I've been going for. I want to say, Madam Chair, that under other business below this, I will comment on the letter that came to us from Mrs. Squires, because there's some misconceptions in here that affect, you know, my vote and what's going on here. But that being said, I just don't understand where the logic is to keep with the sweeping S. And the further to that degree, you know, at some point you may have to talk about condemnation, right? So you're talking about 11 parcels in condemnation versus one. At some point, if push comes to shove and nobody blinks, you're going that route. So what are the costs involved with that? So, you know, I think all the two, not everybody in this room wants to go Lincoln to Olympian, but the majority do. But if we do it smart and we work together and we don't interfere with those residences that are there, whether they were after Shirley Squires' home was built or before, they're there now. So why wouldn't we take a look and come up with the best solution for those properties? And it, for the life of me, I don't understand, just because we have a 1999 survey done, that we can't logically look at, guys, gals, what we need to do today. It's 2011. Thank you.
Alex, oh wait, Diane, and then Alex.
Okay. Just a simple question here. As I'm looking at Project X and the match portion, mm-hmm. Is that based on going all the way up above north of Olympian? Because if that's the case, would that number be a little bit less for the county?
Actually, all of these...
that 1.1 million?
All of these different fundings of projects are based on the approved alignment. So that would actually be funding of the green alignment.
Okay, so you would it be about the same if we let's say went further west and stopped at Olympian? It would be just pretty much the same as the green.
Construction wise, it's almost a coin flip. You've got a little bit more right of way to purchase because you're not on any current alignment of a roadway. Obviously, if you extend it north of Olympian Drive, then those costs increase.
So this 1.1 million is a pretty good estimate if we stay right at Olympian.
Right. Very close.
Okay. Thank you.
Alex, and then Stephanie.
Stephanie, would you mind if I sort of did a give and take here? Because I think I'm sort of going to try to go through a process here. I'll try to keep this brief. Jeff, I appreciate the contribution that you've made to this, and I think this has gone a long way to sort of clarifying, you know, the options. There's been a lot of information floating around, and people claiming the alignments here, claiming the alignments there. So I think you've done a good job by sort of identifying potentials and going out and talking to, you know, some of the stakeholders to get a sense of the situation on the ground. So I just want to confirm some things that I think I understand about this, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Sure.
I'm not trying to express a preference. I'm just trying to make sure we all understand where you're coming from. My assumption is that the funding for the section that crosses the railroad tracks, that's Section A,
yes.
Is essentially contingent on there being a solution to Solution X at this point.
Absolutely.
The state's presumably not going to fund a bridge to nowhere.
Yeah, that's why on the timeline you have to have the Phase 1 design study done before they would allow us to go to bid for the Olympian Drive project, because they want to make sure what they told, they're not going to build a road to nowhere.
Okay. The 1.1 million that's shown is the Champaign County contribution, or potential Champaign County contribution to mm-hmm. Project X. Is that essentially part of, is that the fringe road money? Is that money that's effectively set aside for fringe roads?
That would come out of our motor fuel tax funds, and there was a resolution that was approved that set aside a certain dollar amount every year. By the time we, and I showed this, and I didn't bring that tonight, but some time ago there was a spreadsheet that was presented that showed that in this time frame of 2013, 2014, There would be monies available based on that set-aside that the county board had approved in order to fund a project.
Okay. My understanding is that regardless of where North Lincoln Avenue would be built, you know, what alignment was chosen, it would be a city of Urbana street. It would not be a county road.
Right.
And that essentially the, but that the city does not have the power to condemn land outside the corporate limits.
That's right. They have the right to purchase property as long as it's a willing seller, but not to condemn property.
So in other words, the reason for the county's involvement is twofold. One is to, they want the, we need to spend, there's a proposal that the county spend $1.1 million on it. But secondly, that in order for this to happen, if condemnation of land is required, the county would have to be the instrument for doing that rather than the city of Urbana.
That's correct.
Concluding, my conclusion from that is that if the Squire Farm as a whole, meaning a majority of its owners, were a willing seller, the county would not need to have any role in this other than the financial contribution, right? The city of Urbana could effectively negotiate with the Squire Farm to purchase the entirety of the right-of-way for something like the yellow alignment.
Yeah, they could do negotiations on their own behalf.
Okay. Is it safe to say, based on this letter that we received, that the majority of the Squire Farm shareholders are not a willing seller at this point?
The way I understand the Squire Farms agreement to be read, and I'm not a lawyer, but this is what I've been told, is that it takes unanimous. All three have to be saying, yes, we are going to sell the property. So regardless of whether it's one, two, or three that don't want to do it, it has to be a unanimous vote of their.
Based on that, is it safe to say that at least at this time, the Squire Farm is not a willing seller?
Based on that letter, I would assume so.
Okay, that's the conclusion that I drew. Is it also safe to say that no one can make anyone up there, the Squire Farm or anyone else, any assurances with regard to whether Olympian Drive will someday go east of Lincoln Avenue to Route 45? I mean, forever is a long time, and I'm not sure anybody's right in a position to say whether it will or whether it won't.
Well, I think the intent, Shirley's intent was that, wasn't that the county or the city say, yes, eventually Olympian Drive will go east. Her intent was to get some kind of letter of understanding or an agreement with the landowners along the Olympian Drive corridor that says when the time comes, we would willingly allow the project to proceed.
Okay. It's my understanding that the city of Urbana has expressed that the reason they prefer the green alignment over something like the yellow alignment is to maximize the size and therefore the flexibility of the unbroken parcel that would be west of the new Lincoln and south of the new Olympian. Is that a fair statement?
That's one of their compelling reasons, yeah.
But that is, that has been stated by the city, right?
Yes, the larger parcel sizes.
Okay, so to sum up, I guess, and I apologize, Stephanie, I appreciate you letting me take the time. My understanding is really the county essentially has three options at this point with regard to our participation in this. We can get behind the green alignment, which would essentially be a commitment on our part to spend the $1.1 million, as well as to use eminent domain if necessary, on the, essentially on the city's behalf, to take a total of 12.6 acres, which would include 5.2 acres from the Squire Farm, and would involve this list of landowners, some of whom are opposed to the project. That's one option, right?
Right.
The second option would be to reopen a location study to look at the potentially the yellow alignment, the red alignment, or anything in between or in the area.
Right.
And potentially commit to spend the $1.1 million and or use eminent domain to take land from whoever that may be, which would include up to 14.4 acres from the Squire Farm if it goes there, or any combination of those landowners.
Correct.
And then the third option is to basically decline to participate. We don't spend the $1.1 million. We don't use eminent domain to take the property, but the project's effectively dead unless Urbana can secure a willing seller for the complete alignment. Is that true?
Yeah, effectively, both projects become dead. A and X.
Okay. Thank you.
Diane.
Lincoln Avenue still go east to 45.
Lincoln Avenue goes north all the way up.
You get by the crushers, the concrete crushers, can start east. It used to go that way.
Well, Lincoln Avenue turns, it goes east, but then it turns back north, and then it turns east and goes back north. Yeah. The new road kind of dead ends, or it does dead end, just shortly after the split.
That's
what I thought.
Yes.
Okay, Diane.
Stephanie,
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Okay, I have a couple of questions, and I'm trying to understand this map, and I'm not an expert by any means. The green line, the red line, both seem as if they're going to be crossing or being affected somewhere along the line, the 100-year floodplain, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so the yellow line, from what I can see, does not appear to have any restrictions whatsoever on that 100-year floodplain. There's nothing affecting the yellow line, correct, with the floodplain?
Just at the very south end of the project where they all meet the current Lincoln Avenue dead end, there's a floodplain area there that they all would affect to some extent.
But it's not as egregious.
Right.
Okay. So with both the green and the red, and it seems to me that the green would probably carry a much heavier risk of flooding. So the engineering on that particular roadway, is that going to be much more expensive to develop that, to channel the water away?
I'm
just curious. What kind of cost that is going to? Is it going to increase it? Is it eventually going to catch us off guard?
You still have to cross the tributary of the Saline Branch at some point, which means a structure, a bridge to go across those. There is, in talking with the engineers, the red alignment where it crosses to the south of the Squire families, or the Shirley Squire's homestead there, does cross the floodplain, and there would probably need to be some mitigation as far as crossing the floodplain and going through some wetlands. But the green one, you know, by the time you get out into kind of the William Pat Geyer property, doesn't encroach on the floodplain again. So regardless of the alignment that's chosen, there's going to need to be some mitigation down on the south end. It appears as though along the green alignment there probably have to be more, yes. So the green crosses down on the south end, the red crosses more just south of Shirley's, and the yellow doesn't cross any of these blue areas, which are the 100-year floodplain. You're right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff, great job. There's a lot of information there, and that herding exercise is a tough one to get all of those parties together. I remain committed to trying to help to figure out a way to get this behind us in a mutually complete and acceptable way to everyone. I just look forward to seeing economic development in those areas sooner rather than later. Seems to me, in hearing the description, you've met with the parties that were close on yellow. Now, I know what the letter here says from Shirley, but it sounds like also she wasn't absolutely averse to the idea of yellow going to the west of her house, and that where we're close is, I also heard the other landowners who have been speaking at the other end, saying that they are, while they're not thrilled with yellow, that they find that acceptable as a compromise. Feels like we're close. It feels like we're at a point now where, excuse the basketball term, but the full court press to make that happen. Because of time sensitivity, hearing the $170,000, the 18 months to do yellow, new location study, that even with those obstacles, it seems possible to be there with this. Am I reading that wrong? I understand the challenges of family maybe not getting along and all of that, but it feels like we're close. Is that there? That's maybe something worth pushing for.
I guess, you know, in a compromise, nobody wins and everybody loses a little, right? So it kind of sounds, in your description there, that's where those folks are. Now, you know, the caveat to Shirley's was she really wants to see 45 or Olympian Drive go all the way to Route 45. I don't know that her opinion of the yellow line would be favorable, given that you know, it's going to be A and X only, and C, you know, there's nothing in the works for the future for land along C. I can't speak on her behalf.
Right, absolutely. Although it is very difficult to guarantee that it will go out.
Right.
I think that most people are in agreement that if we're bulging at the seams with economic development, there's only one direction for that road to go. I've never been against it going to 45 only when it makes sense. We have the money to do A, X, and C now. And so when we're that close, and when we have the opportunity to get this behind us like that, with some money from QOT, also I know that there are some folks with Champaign County First here. I have not been part of those meetings recently. I don't know what the latest is as far as their efforts to go to D.C. I heard focus on A and X, but I don't know if those efforts in Springfield and in D.C. could end up helping with the rest of the funding. I would assume that that's a possibility, and that's why we would be focusing on that. And so that's just another observation. But to be able to start phase one that quickly, it seems to me that an approach would be to hot foot it in trying to see if it is at all possible to make the yellow alignment happen. I have no problem with reaffirming the purpose and the need of A, X, and C. I don't think that that's really an issue. And for me, it's been doing X right, being as if it's possible to not intrude on as many people as possible to do that. A, fine. You know, C, fine. I think that we're that close. So I encourage us to make the final push. I would be willing to help with any of that I can personally to see if that can happen. It's just a suggestion to push that through to the end if at all possible, and now, because we need it from a timing standpoint.
Right. Understanding that if we reopen this, there's no guarantee that yellow line is exactly where the alignment will fall either.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. Your presentation covered that very well. Thank you again.
Mm-hmm. Al?
Thanks. The reason that I suggested the yellow line to the subcommittee when looking and evaluating the green was a number of things that were reiterated here. Less disruption of a number of different landowners, litigation from a group of landowners versus this westerly route. And from the letter, I don't see that there'd be a problem with the yellow or the green in Ms. Squire's letter, because if she wants to have 45, if she wants Olympian Drive to go all the way to 45, it could happen off the yellow as well at some future point. So if she feels that that it couldn't go on, let's put it this way, on either side of her property, we're going to extend to Olympian Drive. And at that point, and I'm discounting the yellow line above Olympia Drive. I don't feel, in my personal opinion, it's necessary to spend the money on that point at that above at this point. But the yellow has what I feel the best option for us, with the least litigation and the best opportunity for development. Now, we heard tonight that the gentleman from the asphalt company and some of the others want access. Well, certainly the yellow line would give them a better access route than the green would. down to 74 or up to Olympian Drive and over to 57 from the more westerly route. And that certainly would make sense for them to stick around if, you know, they need that access, and the access would be to either of the major high interstates that we have. So I would support a motion to move forward on opening up Phase 1 on the Yellow Line or approximately thereof on the westerly side.
Mr. Koch spoke about this, and then Mr. Kurtz also spoke about the S-curve north of Olympian Drive along the Yellow Corridor. And we can't just offhandedly say that that particular piece of the project doesn't need to be there, because there may be some different decision that comes out of the design study that we're not aware of that mandates that that piece of the project get built. I can't sit here and say we can stop Yellow at Olympian without going through the entire design phase and seeing how the traffic flows and how FHWA and IDOT, what their comments would be to that. So I can't sit here and guarantee you that that would be the outcome of the design study. It may be, it may not be. I don't even want to put a percentage on it, but I just don't want anybody to walk away from here with the false impression that we can do something to the west and absolutely end it at Olympian Drive and there won't be any consequences from any people that are reviewing the design study.
Oh, yeah, I could just... Oh. Thank you. The reason for the Yellow Line above Olympia Drive to Lincoln is to attach, but if we're going to attach to Olympia Drive, they would then... To get back to Lincoln Avenue, all you'd have to do is drive east on Olympia Drive to where Lincoln Avenue almost connects where that green line is, and then just go north. So why would we need, even in this design study, to look at the extension to Lincoln Avenue when it's just as easy for them to go over to Lincoln Avenue from Olympia Drive?
I think I can answer that one with confidence, because we had this conversation with IDOT at a meeting this week. If there was an alignment chosen west of the Green Road, Olympian Drive would not go any farther than wherever that intersection happened to be. So we would not build Olympian Drive over to Green and then put an intersection somewhere over westerly with Lincoln Avenue, because you can't end a project of this magnitude at a roadway that doesn't handle trucks. So there has to be a logical termini to the project, and that logical termini would be some roadway that would handle the truck traffic that's coming across Olympian Drive. So they don't want to build it over to existing Lincoln and then back up and put in an intersection.
Well, let me make sure I'm clear on what you're saying here, Jeff. You're saying that trucks would use this route up to a single lane Lincoln Avenue and head north?
But what I'm saying is that they built Olympian Drive to some other alignment that is west of the green alignment, that would be the end of Olympian Drive in this current phase.
Okay.
They would not continue to build it over.
Well, it ends right now on the other side of the tracks.
Right.
And there, it just dead ends there.
Right.
So what's the difference of a dead ending there or a dead ending after Lincoln Avenue?
20 years, 15 years. I mean, there's been a lot of changes in a lot of things out there, and that's just what we were told. I'm regurgitating information from people that make those decisions. We don't even know what will actually happen with existing Lincoln Avenue, assuming that the new Lincoln Avenue is westerly of the existing one. It may, at some point, be a cul-de-sac and not even be a through street. Because it's not a truck route, so you can't build a truck route to a non-truck route road and stop it, because you're putting trucks out there to go to a point where they would damage a roadway if they went to the end of it and got off. You understand what I'm saying?
The yellow line would be a truck route.
Right, correct. But that's where Olympia Drive would stop.
And the green Olympia Drive to the west over the tracks is would be a truck
yeah.
route.
Yeah.
Right? So we're not dead-ending it into a non-truck road. It's Olympia Drive is
right.
attaching to Lincoln Avenue.
Right, but there would be no roadway between green and yellow, is my point.
Right.
Yes.
I see what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying?
Okay, so they couldn't get to Lincoln Avenue that way.
Right.
Above. Okay.
Right. Okay, Tom, and then Stan.
I guess the concern I have, having gone through this before as a board member in years past, I'm a little concerned that we have new lines being drawn after we've done a study. We've invested a lot of, various governmental entities have invested a lot of money, and we're kind of at that point where some people are considering a new yellow route, for lack of a better term, that would require yet another study, and it, as our engineer said, it may not even come out to be the yellow route. It could come out any number of ways, and we'd be back at ground zero, because I guarantee if it came in a different angle, people are going to be angry, and they're going to appear before the board, and they're going to say, no, that's not the right one. We want a line drawn where the pink is. You are going to get people angry no matter what you do on this project. There is going to be some land taken. There is going to be some frustration. There's going to be some anger. It always takes place with road building, building, condemnations. I don't want people's feelings hurt. I don't want their farms harmed. I want to do this in a way that is positive. But I don't think we can allow rather arbitrary lines to be drawn after we've done a study, and then just go out and have another study at $170,000, which may or may not give us that yellow line. I'm very concerned about this ability to delay, and potentially not build this at all, which is why I think we probably should take a vote on whether or not we actually want to do this project. Before we ever get into yellow lines or green lines or pink lines, do we want to recommit ourselves to this project? Because that might give us the entire answer. Quite frankly, I mean, I favor doing this project, but I'm not totally convinced that there's a clear-cut majority on this board that favors the project unless they can have their specific line. And I think that is where the problem is. I'd like to see us put on the agenda next month a direct vote on do we favor ABC project, and specific motions on whether we're going to go with the green or whether we're going to go with the pink, which is $125,000 to do that one, or whether we're going to have a new study which could potentially equal the yellow. It's only potential. But I think we have got to stop trying to individually be engineers.
They stand and then round.
Well, Tom sort of summed it up for me. I think that we've been discussing this for quite some time and looked at a lot of angles and a lot of information, and it's only the information we've had before. So, I'm with him that, you know, maybe we need to put something on the agenda and get a vote on it. But at the same time, what Brendan said, there seems to be more consensus on everybody's part toward the yellow line. And as in this body, when we take a vote, I don't always agree, but the majority rules. I don't know what's going to end up as. I have no fear of another study. We see studies come across our desks all the time that we're doing them on pavement or this or that. I'd rather be sure than wrong. And when I keep hearing the word study, the study was done quite some time ago. And I can name numerous things that have changed within this county in the last 15 years, let alone the last 10. Studies are fine. They're there as a tool, much like a budget. But we sit here and argue and hammer it away. We've heard all the information, and I think Tom's on the right track there, that let's say, okay, are we still interested? If so, and that realignment, you know, looking at this map, and I'm no engineer, everybody always says I'm no lawyer, I'm no this, but, you know, this country was built on common people doing a lot of common things, and I can see a lot of play there to come up with some type of design that'll work. And maybe I look at life too simple, but I do agree, Tom, it's time to put it down and have a vote and see where it lies.
Raph?
Yeah. As Tom mentioned, there's no way you're going to put anything through there without making somebody mad. And we've talked about trying not to make people mad, but we have not been talking about problems of traffic and problems of safety in construction. And over the course of our debate and discussion, I've come away with the opinion that the connection of the Green Line to Olympian Drive is far superior to the connection of the Yellow Line to Olympian Drive from the point of view of having a convenient, safe, and economic interchange. Is that a reasonable statement? From an engineering point of view, the Green Line is far superior at that intersection than the Yellow Line.
That's what the design study said in 1999. So people agreed with you, obviously.
Okay.
What do you think?
What do I think?
You're an engineer. I'm going to put you on the spot, but we pay you.
Right.
What do you think? I'm being dead serious. I'm relying on I don't have the expertise.
Right. Yeah.
I certainly derive my opinion from discussion with you.
Mm-hmm. I think if you guys see fit to want to expend the money, that if we study this, green, red, or yellow, if we do it appropriately in today's time, with today's transportation system, and it meets today's needs, whatever comes out of that study obviously will be what we need. I mean, it would go to you folks, it would go to the current landowners out there. I'm not a proponent of spending money or spending time, but I am a proponent of doing the right thing. And sometimes studies are a little bit antiquated. I'm not going to say that this one's totally antiquated, but if you do a study and it comes back that the green one was the best one, you spent money to reaffirm what we already knew, but it actually gets us to a point where we might be able to vote on something too. Correct?
Okay, Pius? Oh, wasn't you? Okay. Now, I thought Pius wanted to talk. Okay, then. Pius relent to you, and then Christopher and Jan.
Okay, I have a few information questions. Before I was elected to the board and sitting and listening to a lot of the details that came up, one issue that I haven't heard addressed has to do with the archaeological findings in this area. What is the status of that situation?
The only cultural resource that is identified on this is actually just south of the Squire Farms. That was the cultural resource that was discovered during the initial phase. There hasn't been any investigation westerly of the Squire's homestead there of any type of cultural material. So I couldn't tell you where things might lie out there, but there are some cultural findings there in that floodplain area just to the south of the Squire's homestead.
And does that not have to be studied so we know? I mean, if that's the case, then the red option probably would not be an option.
Those can be mitigated, which means that they can discover the artifacts and remove them and mitigate through that means. That's an appropriate way, at least through FHWA's eyes, to be able to deal with those types of issues. If you find, for example, an arrowhead or something, they need to mitigate it and take pictures, remove it, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Obviously, if there was something much larger than that, it could be an issue, but I don't believe we're dealing with any kind of very large artifact areas or cultural areas.
Okay. My second information question has to do with the columns indicating the potential acreage involved with these present configurations that you have on the map.
Yeah.
Is this actual acreage that will be used, or is this just showing acreage under which the road will be laid?
This is actually acreage to build the four-lane section in the future, because when we went through all the public participation, one of the things that came out of that was that regardless of whether you're only going to build two lanes at this time, you know, it would be appropriate to purchase the right-of-way for a four-lane section so that you don't have to come back and do that in the future.
But is it also including the acreage for the building, all of the borrow pits and things like that that are needed to build two or four lanes?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Quite frankly, I think Mr. Nudo and Ms. Holder made some interesting comments about area for development and floodplain issues. So I really would like to see some more work done on the yellow drawing here on the map. And actually, it's the most recent engineering suggestion of a possible route. And this is a rhetorical comment because people can't answer this, but I would be really curious why that was not one of the proposed routes in the, back in the study in the 1990s.
There was one that went north,
oh,
but it
was?
Got...
Oh, okay.
It wasn't one of the last three that made the cut, I guess, for the true investigation.
Okay,
it
and then my last...
Sorry, it was one of 10, Patsy. There were 10 lines. The three came out, but this westerly route was started in 99.
Thank you very much for that clarification. And then I'm assuming from your statement that the bends that are shown here on the map are just pictorial at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, the yellow line is totally pictorial. There's nothing there that represents exactly any kind of radius that could be built. The red and the green ones were actually in a design study and were engineered to some extent.
Okay.
The green one totally engineered, the red one...
So the yellow one could move a little bit slightly west because that seems like quite a curve there.
Right. Yeah, that's basically comes from the information that the landowners group brought and asked for us to look at that westerly alignment. So we drew it basically as they had represented it as closely as we possibly could.
Thank you for all the clarifications.
Okay, Chris.
Just a real brief point. I've heard from a number of people, I think this is what I was getting from Mr. McGinty and Mr. Kurtz and potentially Mr. James as well. I'm sorry if this isn't what you said, then I apologize. But several people have said that there sort of seems to be more consensus for the yellow alignment than for the green alignment. And I think we need to make the make a distinction that a lot of, I think, the initial support for having Mr. Blue look at this westerly alignment was the possibility that this might be able to be completed with a single, with I guess two willing sellers. And I think if you look at that yellow alignment in the context of the Squire Farm being willing to sell, it looks pretty good. And I would not be surprised if we were able to get a consensus from the board that that was an appropriate alignment to study. If there is no evidence that the Squire Farm is willing to sell, in fact, there seems to be, based on this letter, considerable evidence that they're not, then effectively when we're looking at green versus yellow, we're looking at basically the same amount of land. In fact, we're looking at more land that needs to be purchased for the yellow alignment, and we're looking at well, even excluding the top part, I think you're still looking at more land, right? Well, okay, the numbers, we don't even have an exact number for the amount of land that's north of,
you're right, yeah,
Olympia Drive, but looking at this, I mean, given that much of the land north of the I get the Dyson, northeast of the Dyson property is on existing right-of-way. I mean, my understanding is that we're looking at basically the same amount of land. Well, let's just say, can we say we're looking at about the same amount of land either way? In that case, I think we have to ask ourselves, you know, we're basically saying we think it's better to take the land from this landowner rather than take the land from the other landowner. I'm not sure that's the basis for engineering decisions if we're not looking at a willing seller in either case.
Right. I just wanted to comment on Ms. Petrie's question. You had asked about the alignments, and basically the three alignments that made the cut realigned with existing Lincoln Avenue, just as Mr. Alex had said, to try to lessen the impact of the land takings on the roadway, as well as one thing that you have to consider is what's going to happen to old Lincoln Avenue if it's not reused as an alignment of the roadway. Who's going to accept the burden of maintaining that forever? In the near term, it's probably Summer Township, because it's theirs now, so they have to continue to maintain a roadway that could have been reused, you know, to build a new roadway. And at some point in the future, once the city of Urbana annexes this area, then it becomes an issue that the city of Urbana has to deal with. They've got a new alignment for Lincoln Avenue, and they've got an old Lincoln Avenue, and somehow they got to deal with both of those. So you're putting in parallel routes that they have to deal with forever. And I think that was a large decision-making factor in the original study back in 1999.
Well, a tongue-in-cheek comment would be then we take care of all of these issues and just use Fort Harris.
Okay, Jan, then Richards, and then you, Brent.
Well, I agree with Tom that we need to decide whether we want to move ahead. I think that we do need a project. When you're talking about if you are interested in the yellow line, that would take another study. I guess I'm wondering about the timeline. If we do another study and then we don't have the funding and then we're several years down the road and then it comes up again and then people are going to say, well, that study's too old. I mean, how many times are we going to have to keep doing this? Maybe you could comment on that.
If we were going to undertake another study, I think it would have to be undertaken with the thought that when the study's done, we're going to build it. Not we're going to study it so we can put it on the shelf and wait 10 more years. I mean, the funding, and we can't build Olympian Drive unless we build Lincoln Avenue. IDOT has told us that, because they're not going to allow us to just dead-end Olympian Drive out in the middle of nowhere. So the board, as I believe Mr. Betts said, needs to make a commitment that, yes, these projects are viable, and you know, say that the purpose and need of the projects are viable, that we're going to build them, and make that commitment so that if you're going to spend the money to do a design study, then you better follow the recommendations that come out of the design study. So you don't just get to do design study to get the wrong answer and then say, well, that design study didn't work either. We don't like that alignment. We're going to try something else.
Richards, Brandon, Al, and then Tom again.
Just want to amplify what Chris said earlier. Since we have stakeholders all over the map on which one they want to use, and we would have opposition to any of these three, I'm not for sure what the best answer would be, but I just hope when we look at this, we take the personalities, the local personalities out of this, who of course have their own interest and they want to push for the things, but make sure that what we're looking at is which of these roads, routes is going to be the simplest, has the most utility, and is the most cost efficient for the county, and also make sure we consider the complications of doing a new study when we do this. Any of these is going to be difficult, but we should make sure we look at the bigger picture, the next 20, 30, 50 years, and make sure we do what we think is going to be the best road.
And then
thanks. A couple of quick concerns. couple of quick concerns. I think that if we were to address Tom's point, I feel you. I want it to be done. But if I think if we move forward too quickly and we vote on green next month, it'll die. Just personal opinion. I don't know that we've got the votes for it, and I don't want to see that happen. I want to see the project work. I want to see it work the right way. I can take personalities out of the equation, but I can't take the people that live there out of the equation. I'm concerned about if it's possible to minimize the impact on landowners. I would prefer that, and I think most people, I hope, would. And to Chris's point, I don't believe that we should be too quick to assume that one letter means that we can't get people to agree. Simply put, recommit, absolutely. I think we should recommit as soon as we can, because I think that this board wants to see the project happen the right way, and that we are very close. Thank you.
Okay, Al, and then Tom.
You know, Jeff.
Oh, Al.
Go ahead. You haven't just spoken. Jeff, do you meet with IDOT pretty soon here?
I meet with IDOT more than I like to. Yes, I can meet with IDOT at any time.
Okay. We shouldn't be nothing. All this talk is not solving nothing. And if we had to let the highway,
I'm sorry, we had to let the highway committee do its job, you wouldn't have all these problems. We never had a road yet that we couldn't build or come back to this body with some kind of suitable answers. So if, why don't we just wait until you meet with our doctor? They got to be the boss man anyway, and get all these answers. And I'd like to go with you.
Well, we have Olympian Drive subcommittee meetings at least monthly.
I'll go with you. I'm on the highway committee, I think.
As of tonight.
Okay, Al.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff, I have to disagree with you on what the purpose of the study is, and I'll be honest with you, I mean no offense, but there's an old adage in real estate, he who pays for the appraisal gets the price they want. And what I think this study should be is, will something close to the yellow work? And then the board can vote between yellow, green, red, blue, whatever. What variables that you put into the person who's going to do this study, none of the 27 of us have any control over. None of us know what Urbana's going to say they want entered into the thing. In other words, I just pointed up that I think the yellow gives us more opportunity for economic growth down the road when and if the Squires sell this land and move on and it becomes another Apollo. Time changes. People say they aren't going to sell, and then they sell, or their generations after them sell. And so what I guess I'm saying is the study for me is not to be which one's better, green or yellow. The study is, can yellow work, and then let the board decide, and we'll take the consequences, you know, whatever that is.
Well, the consequences of that could very well be if you don't use the appropriate study process, that nothing gets built because the $20 million goes away.
Let me respond to that. And you know what? We built Boulder Dam. I mean, if an engineer says we can't go yellow route, we built Boulder Dam over mountains. So I can't believe that yellow or something close to yellow will not work.
I'm not saying it won't work, but you have to do a full-blown study.
That's what I'm getting at as to how maybe the study is going to be devised. So, you know, I think the best thing to do is just have a study to see if yellow will work, and let the board take the considerations. We know what green is going to be. We know the consequences there. We know what the consequences of yellow. But I don't want to have the study come back and say, green or yellow, you got to take it.
What I'm saying now is, if you don't follow the federal aid guidelines when you do a study such as this, there will be no federal money to build the project. You can't just do your own independent study and say Yellow works and say, look, FHWA, we got an answer, and they're going to go, okay. I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious here. I'm being very serious. This project is a $20 million project, and in order to, for it to come to fruition, it's, it can't come out of the pocketbooks of Champaign County.
Okay, Tom, Van Pius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to beat this because we have been here a long time. We still have more business, but all I've asked is that next month we put on the agenda for a vote whether or not we want the project. I want there to be some sense of, does this board want to continue having a project? I don't, the yellow, the pink, the orange, or whatever that color is, kind of oddball color, green, I don't think we have to absolutely decide that in that first vote. The first vote is, do you want to have the project itself? Then you can have the one thing that is approved and that does have a study backing it up is the green. The board can reject the green if they want to. If they do, that means there's a new, has to be a new study, whether you're doing the pinkish orange or the yellow. Mm-hmm. And that's fine if that's where the board wants to go. I heard something that I found very interesting. If you study, then you better follow it. And that's, to me, the $64,000, in this case $20 million question, because I am not convinced that when you have an objective study following the federal guidelines, which does not involve putting your thumb on the scale to decide it's going to be yellow, it's an objective study with objective standards, that we're going to come out and be able to support what comes out of that study. I'm not convinced that that will. I think the division may very well still be there. I'm willing to try it if that's what people really want to do, but it really does have to be an objective study following those federal guidelines, and I think it will be an interesting result if we do that. But I do think we should at least reaffirm our commitment to the project itself.
Can I allow Pogro to come to the podium quickly? And I think he's got some. He's been obviously around this project since it began, and I think he's got some things that he just wanted to. Would you allow that, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Gray, Public Works Director for the City of Urbana. Appreciate you giving me a few minutes to talk. I want to share a little bit about the O alignment, just so that you have as much information tonight as you deliberate in the coming weeks ahead. I was involved in the location study process, back in the 90s for both projects, Olympian and Lincoln Avenue. And from the Urbana perspective, as we look at the O line, there's about three or four things you need to be aware of. Number one is that the yellow line, you have to complete the area north of Olympian Drive to connect to Lincoln Avenue. You've got to have a way to go north and south. So the yellow line, as you see tonight on your paper, ballpark number is about a $1.2 million additional cost to the green line. I think you need to be aware of that. And it is the additional right-of-way that you need. The right-of-way on this drawing here that you have is the right-of-way we need to acquire. If the road ends at a T on yellow, we got to go north and south, not just south. It's not an L curve. It's going to be a T intersection. Secondly, is that Jeff alluded to it, but I want to reinforce this again. We do not want to have to maintain two parallel roads. Someday that will be annexed, and I'm looking 20 to 50 years. The old Lincoln Avenue is a geometric disaster for road truck travel. Okay, someday it's going to have to be rebuilt. Do you or the county want to partner with the city and rebuild old Lincoln Avenue in its existing alignment? I don't think so. The reason why green was used is to essentially get rid of or farm out, if you will, the existing Lincoln Avenue, because, and unfortunately we don't show it tonight, I'd like to provide the access points off the green, but it does provide access east and west for future development. And eventually, the old Lincoln Avenue will go away if homesteads are sold or development occurs. That was the intention back then. So with yellow, you're spending millions of dollars for yellow, but sometime you're going to have to deal with the existing Lincoln Avenue. Number two is that if and when Olympian Drive does go to US 45, okay, there will be no additional or second intersection with the existing Lincoln Avenue. That's going to not be there. We want to have at least half-mile intersection points or greater. So there will be like a cul-de-sac situation. It won't be like two intersections 1,200 feet apart. So I think you need to understand that. If and when we go east of this yellow line, the existing Lincoln Avenue that's up there now, there's not going to be another intersection there. It's going to be just one intersection. So we've got the duplicate road. We have over $1 million additional cost. We want to keep the half-mile access points intact. And for development purposes, we do want to have larger parcels available. The green line allows that to occur versus the yellow line. So those are, from a balance perspectives, reasons why, and again, Jeff is absolutely correct. There'd have to be a location study following federal rules. That's a requirement. If we don't want to do that, then it's strictly local dollars building a road, no state, no federal dollars. Thank you.
Suspend the rule first.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I make a motion to suspend the rule, so
we didn't do it to start with. So, Bill,
all in favor of suspending the rule?
You don't have to suspend the rules. We're not in public participation.
Oh, okay.
He was asked as a witness, therefore you're in charge, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay, Al, you may ask.
Bill, so what you're saying is you really don't care about those 11 families, do you? I mean, we now know that...
There's six families versus four families.
Well, okay, use the number, whatever it is. You really don't care that... You know, they're paying taxes to have their roads improved at some point in time, that those houses have value and that they're going to lose value if you don't take care of this. And so basically it's in the long-term plan not only to, you know, put that S-shaped curve in there, but eventually to have them gone.
First of all, I do care, okay? In any scenario, you're going to have to buy right away from a property owner, willing or unwilling, okay? It's true for Olympian Drive also. So I'm not saying that this decision is an easy decision with respect to buying property from property owners, but in any scenario, you have to buy it from property owners. There's four in the yellow line, there's six in the green line.
Any more questions? Okay. Alex, then Brandon.
I'm just going to be real quick, and this is directed at Mr. Newton and to some extent at Mr. Betts, their comments. If we want to do a new study, because the old study...
Wait a minute. Do you have any questions?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Right. Okay, then. We'll let Brandon ask his question.
Just very quickly, I'm trying to figure out... I've talked with others, maybe you, Bill, about this before. Understanding the need to go north of Olympian, if you're looking at yellow, going north of Olympian to reconnect Lincoln, it is impossible to do a stop sign and stop sign, basically. I understand what's preferred from an engineering perspective, but is it, and Jeff, maybe you, both of you, understand that that is the ideal from an engineering perspective, but what I'm wondering is if it's possible, if it's a million extra bucks, if that could be phase two, if that could be done when there's a need, because I think a lot of people would argue whether there is a need for anything to go north of Olympian for a while.
IDOT is a major player in this. We did have discussions with them. We're building these roads for access. There's going to be access to go north, too. Folks that live in Thomasboro, Round 2, or whatever, they may be coming down Old Lincoln Avenue to this point. They want to come from the north. But what we're suggesting, if it's just an L situation, is that shunts that access point. Okay, you have to go down Lincoln Avenue, literally all the way over to New Lincoln Avenue, south of the bridge, to go back up. I mean, it's a very, discontinuous alignments.
If there's not much traffic there, going north of Olympian, anyone going north of Olympian, I find it hard to believe. I know Hanson has talked about all this traffic that's going to be north of Olympian, and I think that people who are up there wonder if that's really going to be the case. So what's the problem with stopping and turning and stopping and turning for a while until there's a need?
Okay.
Steve O'Connor.
Thanks, Ray. I just wanted to hear a little bit more about the money. Jeff or Bill, either one, maybe. The Plan A, $15 million. Is that a current number, or is that an estimate that's got hair on it? It's so old.
It's got less hair than you. How's that? It's a current estimate. Those aren't 1999 numbers. Those are real numbers.
But if we have a... I'm sorry, Jeff, excuse me. If we haven't committed ourselves to an alignment yet...
The Olympian Drive, there is no other alignment, basically. I mean, there's one line that we've been working on since day one.
Mm-hmm. And there were solid numbers to back that up.
Yes.
And we don't know where they came from, but they're out there. We take the federal government's...
They came from our consulting firm, Hanson's. They aren't numbers that anybody else came up with.
I'm amazed that we can have solid numbers when we don't even know where in the heck we're going with it yet.
Well, how solid do you... Olympian, we know where Olympians... We know the line that Olympians going to follow. The vast majority, let's say it's 90% of that, is building the bridge. And we know where the bridge is going to go, and we know how long the bridge has to be. The roadway portion of Olympian Drive is minor as far as dollars go versus the bridge. Almost the entire A project, Project A, is almost entirely a bridge.
Okay, thank you. You don't mind if I say good luck with the 15 minutes? No.
Okay, John and then Diane.
Well, I really didn't have my hand up, but I can't let this opportunity pass. You know, we wouldn't be here tonight spending all this time up a banner with a cut and run years ago.
Well, my comment was I do agree that we need to get over that bridge. There's something that has to be done. But at the same time, too, I don't want to spend a lot of county money and hand it over to the city of Urbana and not get something for it. I don't mind doing part of it and sharing, but I don't want to see going up further north. Because honestly, I live up that way. I wouldn't come down Lincoln Street unless you were coming out of someplace on the main street of Thomasboro.
She loves 45.
Okay, Chris.
I think moving a project onto the land of a willing seller is a compelling reason to reopen an engineering study, maybe look at a way that this project could be done to minimize impacts on unwilling sellers and put it on the land of willing sellers. The fact that we want to take land from one guy and not from the other guy is very hard to justify as a reason to reopen an engineering study.
Any more questions from Mr. Gray? Patty?
Well, back to the study. I'm having a little problem that I'm looking at the yellow line, which is from something current or potentially current from BKB. Isn't that where that came from?
It came from, yeah, Brian Bradshaw.
Okay, so that was done in 2010, where the others were done in the 1990s. So we do not have comparables.
There was no study done for the yellow line. I mean, he literally said it meets IDOT standards, it has the appropriate curvature, and it hits Olympian Drive and it hits Lincoln Avenue.
Okay, I thought he had done more study.
No.
Thank you.
That's all.
Libby Tyler with the City of Urbana.
Okay, there's another City of Urbana. Say your name.
Libby Tyler, Community Development Director for the City of Urbana. And just a very quick point I wanted to make. I am a planner with the city, and I did want to just remind the county board that the alignment shown in green is in our comprehensive plan, which was adopted in 2005. It's also shown in the county's QOTS long-range transportation plan, which has been adopted just last year. And the reason I bring this up is our comprehensive plan has an official roadmap, which is pursuant to the statute that gives us that planning jurisdiction for major roads like Olympian and Lincoln, and the alignment does match that green alignment. So if the county board were to look at very different alignments, they would be, in essence, asking the city to go back to its planning jurisdiction and somehow amend this plan, which had a lot of public input, and they would be asking QOTS to change their plan as well. So it is a big change from a planning perspective, and the reason we put these lines on the roadmaps is because of all that public input. I think there is some small adjustments perhaps that you might say would be within that engineering level at planning, but not a major readjustment. So I did want to bring that to your attention. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Madam Chair, we're done with this, but...
Then if you're done, then move on to the next item.
Something, there has to be a decision made.
I understand. We'll
Mr. Betts asked me what I believe is the engineering. He said, I think there has to be a decision made by this board, one way or the other. We can't continue to lead this thing on.
I understand.
I'm just as on this one.
I don't believe I have anything else. That's all I have.
Okay, we're going to go into other business. Al Newell?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the letter Mrs. Squires wrote and just let you know that I asked the state's attorney to make an evaluation of whether I have a conflict. Just so all of you know, I have personally recused myself from other types of business where actually my partners would receive remuneration in the courthouse, and I recused myself even though I don't take any profit from that. But in the case of this, Mrs. Squires' contention that I have a relation with Mr. and Mrs. Ziegler, I saw him in the hallway today, and I did confirm that my wife, I actually knew this because we had a meeting at the Ziegler's when we were talking about going to 45, and she mentioned she was a Kobo, my wife's a Kobo, and so I asked my wife, and she said, yeah, you know, I think we're second cousins, and she recalls she went to the Ziegler wedding 50 years ago. My wife was, I can't say the age, but you know, she was a lot, she was just a child. We had a wedding, and it was a smaller wedding, so we didn't invite the Zieglers. And I checked in the hallway, and I am definitely, and she's not in the will either. So Julia Reitz will take a look at it, but I really don't believe I have a conflict. The overriding thing, and Pius pointed this out to me, is that the Zieglers are not involved in this sweeping S at all. So they have no benefit. In fact, they're tenant farmers for the family, and you know, I might have put them at risk if they lose the tenant thing. So I don't think I'm doing any benefit to them by standing up for whatever I stand up for. So I just want you all to know what that letter meant to me. Thank you.
Hey, Steve O'Connor.
Well, I feel compelled to mention that if we're going to have an abstention rule on second cousinships, I'd as well take my ball and go home, because I could never vote on anything. Check me out on this bill. Bill Bates and I are first cousins once removed, so if he's got an interest in it, maybe I should abstain on the whole thing, too.
Okay. Any more cousins? Okay, anything else for other business? Patty?
Is the highway business done?
Just about.
Okay. Would you rule if we could have a short break? We've been at this for 2 hours and 45 minutes before we go on to other agenda items.
Let's do consent agenda and then we'll take a 5 minute break. There's nothing for chair's report and nothing to go on consent agenda. Okay, B1 on the consent agenda. Other than that, nothing else my way.
Take a 2 minute break.
5 minute break.
Make it quick.
At least.
Thank you.
everybody. Come to that. Have fun here watching.
Session. We are dealing with county facilities. I know we're running late tonight, but we still do have business and undoubtedly some more interesting discussions. Mr. Reinhardt, if we could have the physical plant reports.
On page 33, you'll see the final year-end report for 2010. The only significance there that's really noticeable is the percentage of the gas service, electric service that remained. So we did quite well last year with that. The other two pages, 34 and 35, are for four-year information.
I'd entertain a motion to place the physical plant monthly reports and year-end report on file. Moved by Kohler, second by Mr. J. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same motion carries. On page 36, there's a county facilities construction history and potential long-term plan. If you can briefly address the contents.
Certainly. I was asked to give us a 20-year history of what we've done, basically 15 years, starting in 1991. The upper half of the upper portion of that report shows you all the existing buildings that the county owned at that time, their locations. And if you can see from the construction, actually the starting in 1995, the purchase of the Perkins Administration Building was when the county started moving forward with square footage. The third column, new building, there's one area where I put an asterisk by each building that showed potential design with expansion capabilities. The juvenile detention center also was designed with expansion capabilities. So as each building was designed or purchased, the engineers and the space showed possible expansion in future years. Building on that, hopefully in the future, whenever it comes time, there's already some utilities, some services integrated into the existing buildings as they were built. And then, of course, you can see from the year 1995 or 1991 to 2011, the county has doubled more than their square footage of what they had in the last 20 years.
And questions? One of the things I would like members to do, because there was quite a bit of work putting this together, is keep this, because I think we're going to refer back to this over and over again, because there's certain things that are going to need to happen in the next few years, and I think it's important to know where you've been to get some idea where you're going. This board has been very, very active in the past 10, 12 years in terms of building projects and redesign projects, etc., but it doesn't mean that everything is finished at this point. And there are other things that are going to be down the highway. I don't want to use that word highway. In the hopper that are coming up. And in fact, What do you think in terms of projects, if you were prioritizing based on needs, where do you think the top two or three significant projects are? Yes.
Obviously, it would need to be started with some of the oldest facilities we have, and that would be this building here. It's got some of the largest deficiencies for the age of the equipment and stuff.
Because we have a lot of new board members. By equipment, what equipment are we talking about? What time span are we talking about? Do you have any rough ideas?
I do not have those, but I could. All that information is in the study that was supplied by GHR during our last assessment program.
Okay. Then from your perspective, where do you see this becoming in terms of some of the facilities needs that are most pressing?
Well, as Alan said, getting this building assessed, evaluated, and upgraded is a very important priority and something that we really need to begin budgeting for. We have issues daily with the operation of this building. We have an energy plan that was adopted by this board that we really can't implement in this building because it's impossible to not have a space heater in some areas in order to keep the temperature what it needs to be in other areas. So that's one example. Another thing that I think that the board will need to look at in the next year is the Downtown Correctional Center. That is a building that also structurally would require a lot of work if we're going to maintain it over another 20-year term. And the decision has to be made by the board. Are we going to maintain it, or are we going to move that operation out to the Brookins campus and expand the satellite jail as it was originally designed to be expanded so that the beds that are downtown could be replaced out here, together with moving the sheriff's office staff out here as well. And there are certainly operational efficiencies to be gained with that sort of transition in terms of staffing, which is one of our biggest expenses.
In terms of the correction, at what point do you think we should put this on the agenda to begin that process of discussing?
I would say this year, probably by no later than the third quarter, to start giving some consideration to how we're going to do that.
Okay. Mr. James.
Well, I know at one time there was a group of us, I think it was Mr. Richards and myself and Mr. Smucker, who's now gone, that had started up a committee, and we were working with Deb on some of this. This is always, I know John Jay and I have talked about this many times, and I'm looking at what Alan has put together here, but I would like to see a plan that where we list each one of these buildings, and we start from A to Z with the roof, the heating and ventilation, the interior, by interior I mean paint, carpet, and other issues per building, and then come up with some type of estimated cost, and then somehow start setting up a budget, whether we start looking at replacing it in 5 years, 6 years, based on the life of the equipment. But if we don't, someday we're all going to be sitting here like we do when we get these emergency bills from the jail for chillers that we just spent a lot of money on and what have you, and then we're talking about decommissioning a building after we put millions into it, or over a million. So we really need to look at that and have a plan we can look at. And I would lay money, just knowing the age of some of these buildings and hearing some of the issues Deb brought up tonight, that there are going to be a lot of these cropping up. I had just recently toured the satellite jail, the newer jail, and my land, they need so much work inside of there, cosmetic work. But if we're not putting it in 5 more years, it's going to be so foregone it'll be like the nursing home. We're going to have to think about building another new one. So we really need to look at it, make a hard look at it, get some hard figures and hard dates, and plan on it and start setting the money aside. We always come up with $4,000 here, $5,000 there. Well, if we have a budget with a capital plan, we can just say, sorry, we can't afford to spend that extra cash, because sooner or later, these buildings need a lot of care. And right now, when when I look at our gas bills and electric bills and all the money it takes just to keep them running, we're letting them go to heck in a handbasket. And I remember when this building was finally painted, I thought, my land, you know, what's this say about us? You know, I'm not saying we've got to be in a Taj Mahal, but we need to present ourselves to the people we represent and show them that we care about their money as much as we do spending it.
And the next page, which I think you were looking at, page 37, right, is the beginning of that. And I think the only place where we differ is, rather than looking at it by building, we're looking at it by systems. So we're looking at the HVAC systems for all the buildings. You'll see in the months to come a page for example, the flooring systems for all the buildings, replacement of flooring materials, roofs. You know, so you're absolutely right, and it is our goal to really get that better documented over the next several months, so that when you're setting the fiscal 2012 budget, you're actually budgeting for these expenses, and we're actually planning on replacing an HVAC system 3 years from now, because we know we will have set aside enough money to do it at that point in time.
And Deb, just a quick follow-up.
And that's what I like, but the nice thing is that money's being set aside because we may plan for 3 years, but we may need it in two.
That's the beauty of having that capital replacement plan, and it's worked well for us with technology, because we aren't always buying what we thought we were going to buy this year, but the money's there to deal with it.
Mr. Jay.
Deb really just answered my question. She had started this capital fund, was it last year or whenever it was, you finally started putting some money aside for repairs.
For facilities.
That's always been a big concern of us that was on the facilities committee. We were constantly having repairs. We can build the new buildings because we can borrow the money or bond for the money, but we weren't coming up with the money to take care of them. And we really need to do that. We really need to stick to it. And I'll support you whatever it takes, Deb, to make that work. Thank you.
Oh, Patsy Petrie.
Yes, I appreciate Mr. James bringing this up, because I would have brought it up. I'd like to extend it further than just replacement and repair. I have never seen a long-range plan of 10 to 15 years on building needs for the county, and we need to add that. We have two reports here that have been done for the county on energy efficiency, and we need to find out how much of this has been implemented, what has the implementation saved us, and how can we move forward even more deeply into energy saving. As Mr. Betts mentioned, he invited me to the meeting with he and Ms. Busey, and we talked in great depth about the things that we could do for energy saving and how much money this will save the county, and we need to start planning that. And Ms. Busey even suggested that maybe Birkins would be a good first model for us to look at and decide on some of the steps that can be taken in some of these replace and repair issues. And then I've talked to the people at CDAC who did this report for the county, and they're interested in working with us on a third level report in which they would do the economic analysis so we could have a better understanding of what the saving for the county would be if we took certain steps in implementing many energy efficiencies that we could start doing in our buildings here. I looked at the monthly reports on the cost of energy expenditure for the county buildings, and it's awe-inspiring. And I think we can do quite a bit to start putting in place ways and means to save on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions concerning either construction history, long-term plan, or the capital improvement plan preliminary draft? I'm going to try to keep these on the agenda every month, quite frankly, to keep people apprised and reminded that this issue is there. The next matter is the Art Bartel construction project. Ms. Reinhardt.
There was a handout for the stormwater management planning and requirements for the East Campus. Let's see that. As requested, we had a meeting with
with the City of Urbana, with Matt Bennett, Tom Burns, Chris Billings, Deb Busey, and I, and we invited Mr. Burns to come with us tonight just to answer any questions about the discussion we had. Of course, the letter they're stating was that the original stormwater management plan that was approved by the City of Urbana, their requirements happened in 2006. Their requirements have not changed. We believe that we've identified the minimum amount of work we have to do, and know that there are options that we could design into and cost out for future expansions for our stormwater management plan.
If we did the minimum, what's the rough cost?
Could I ask Mr. Burns to come up here?
Mr. Burns, sure.
Tom Burns again. I don't think we've generated an estimate specifically because we don't know exactly what you want to do and how far we're going to get there and the options of what's the minimum we have to do and the logical, et cetera. So I don't think we have a specific estimate at this time.
Okay.
Sorry, but that's the truth.
Yes, Mr. James.
Mr. Burns, would it be feasible for you to throw out some numbers to us sometime in the future at no cost?
Oh, absolutely. We do that sort of thing all the time.
Astrid Berkstrom.
Is there any reason near the main public entry?
Astrid, you need to use your phone.
Near the main public entry, they have removed all the public parking places, and there's only a drop off.
I'm not sure what plan you're looking at.
I'm looking at this picture. And you want to remove all the parking.
This was a concept that was done 6 years ago as to what might happen in the renovation of the nursing home facility. Those things have actually changed since then, so it's just not the same at all. And Elise has moved in, all sorts of things have changed since then. The main issue we had to demonstrate to the City of Urbana was that this is the sort of thing that probably possibly be done. So now that we're talking about what we're going to do now, we can then the framework of that. So the city's happy with it.
Betsy Petrie.
Yes, I would be happy to have conversations with you to discuss alternative ways of designing the stormwater management throughout the whole county campus. I'm very interested in the work that Jim Patchett does, and I'm sure you're acquainted with his work because he gave a presentation to the City of Urbana. And these are things that would be very nice to explore, and especially to see if in exploring those there is a saving for the county in the way that we do stormwater management.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Other questions? This will be taking some action probably next month on these issues. So you're forewarned.
Okay, for the Art Bartel project update, they are pouring almost half of the concrete floor inside of the building tomorrow. It's been so cold the last week they couldn't even drive the concrete trucks across town. It'd freeze up before they could get it over here and pour it. It has definitely, the cold weather and the snow has definitely slowed down the construction. Several sub-zero days they weren't able to work on it. I expect to have an updated schedule supplied by Rossler Construction next month's meeting for you with his plan on trying to make up the few days he has lost. But construction is moving and will continue, just slowed down a little bit.
You think it's really been cold out?
Yes.
The chair's report, and this is something I've dealt with for about 16 years in terms of the configuration, what have you, of this room. We've brought it up in various forms over the years, and it's usually been shot down. We are going to be switching the size of the county board, as you know, from 27 to 22. So it does open up some opportunities to make this room more accessible, more collegial, so we may be looking at each other possibly instead of looking over each other's heads. What I would like to see happen is not us individually design this, but have us put into the budget, authorized WC to create a line item for this project. We can vote it up or down, but at least have something in the budget so that we can look at this issue. In 2012, we definitely are going to have a different size board. Are people willing to have her create a line item in the budget, and she can do some estimating and figure out how much money would need to be there? Mr. James.
I would say we need to do that. That goes along with the plan of updating and refurbishing things, and I've got a lot of good ideas with laser lights and that, so let me know.
Disco balls.
We're not going to do laser lights, I don't think. Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Pitts. And maybe you can answer this. I mean, what kind of a dollar figure, Ms. Busey, what kind of a dollar figure should we throw out there? I don't know.
I don't think we should throw out a dollar figure. I think we should say she has authority to put a create a line item, and then she can do enough background that she can come back with and say, this is the dollar figure, and we can vote it up or vote it down.
And in the past, have we had any kind of formal dollar figure study?
We have.
That's what I thought, but it's been a long time, though, hasn't it?
Well, Mr. Denny Enman did some reconfigurations at one point, brought it to the Facilities Committee. I was on the regular Facilities Committee at the time. We couldn't get it out of committee because of, I think, just a few thousand dollars at that time. We couldn't get it out of committee. I want to revisit this because we are changing the size of the board. And I think Deb and Alan and others could figure out roughly what it might cost. And I don't think we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. I think we're probably talking relatively small amounts of money. But we have some real serious problems with this equipment, the video systems that we're using. We are real behind the times. If you ever watch us on television, you can't hear through any of these microphones. It's a motion in order.
Sure.
I'm going to entertain a motion to direct WC to create a budget line item for purposes of reconfiguration and updating this room. Moved by Langenham, seconded by Petrie. Discussion. Go ahead.
Well, before we give her this direction, which is terrific, however, is she doing it within the present confines of the walls, or is there options of expanding the space?
I would say that the motion was fairly general, and I think that what we would try to do is look at the issues that are significant, and if moving some walls provides a better solution, then that's probably what we would bring to you. I would say that what we would probably bring to you is what we ultimately would consider to be the best overall solution, and let you pick and choose which things you do or don't want to do out of that.
Well, rather than that approach, I'd rather see three different scenarios brought to us.
Well, and that's a possibility, too. I mean, okay. I'm sure that's probably how it would end up.
Okay, thank you.
You had to pass other questions. People understand we're not doing a dollar amount. We're creating a budget line item. And then she'll come back. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Other business? Don't have any other business. I think everything passed that needed to be passed. Okay. Mr. Kurtz. Thank you.
A lot of, a
I want to thank Mr. Nudo for shortening our agenda tonight from about 3 hours to from 5 or 7 if we had gone through all this agenda tonight. There is one thing I do want to bring up. The study session that we moved these two is slated for the 29th of March, which is after everything next month. I'd like to be able to move that study session up to perhaps the 3rd of March, which is a Thursday evening. Does that sound reasonable for everyone? Because if we're going to get all of these LRMPs implemented, we're going to need to have the board meeting after we have this study session so we can get it on the agenda. So if...
Yeah, I was just going to say, would you check and see when the best... What's that?
No, the schedule.
I have the schedule. You want to see the schedule?
He's going to just be meeting me that night.
We don't have anything scheduled right now.
He doesn't.
We'll get that out to you if we can make that change in the study session. Okay, let's move forward. 9A, direction to Champaign County Regional Planning Commission planner regarding proposed update of the site assessment portion of the land evaluation and site assessment system pursuant to LRMP priority items 4.5A, 4.5B.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Schroeder, second by Richards. I'd like to make one statement and a revision on this site assessment. If it's, we can do that with one revision on the site assessment update committee. I'd like to ask that the Champaign County Director of Planning and Zoning be an advisory member of the SA update committee and not a voting member. He agrees it's fine with him. He is not insulted or humiliated by that at all. So the updated committee will consist of 8 members listed in yours other than Mr. Hall, if that's okay with that. Let's start with Stan was the first to put his hand up.
Okay, if they're voting on issues, and I'm just going to raise the 8, why not 7? That way you wouldn't have a tie.
Well, honestly, I don't see this as being a controversial, politically partisan type of a commission.
Chairman, okay. Mr. Chairman,
what's that?
Point of order. I will move that amendment so that we can discuss the amendment.
On the advisory
amendment.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know that there had been. I thought he gave a stand.
Second, Mr. McGinty, any discussion on the advisory?
But,
okay, Mr. James?
Back to my original. I heard what you were saying, but still there could be a tie vote, and then you're going to sit there. And I thought we were that night in agreement that some of the people that had served previously due to their retirement or lack of involvement would not be one of the people that might be selected again, and then you had your other 7 that would create that void.
We have investigated that, and there are about 5 or 6 members of this that are very active and still in the community, and we will contact them and see if they would like to participate. So they may be older, but you know, seniors are pretty smart.
Oh, I never.
I'm just kidding.
But okay, let's say them 5 that you have in mind. So that's the only 5.
Well, no, yeah, there are 5 or 6 that are
and we'll ask those. No. So do we eliminate the slot then?
What's that?
So let's say all the ones that you're planning on contacting that previously served all say thanks, but no thanks. Do we eliminate the slot, or do we fill it with another?
So if we can't find a past member, I would think that would happen.
I want that on record, then, that we are talking about doing so.
Okay.
Not that it changes next year.
Right. But when you talk about tie votes, you know, we're going to have that a lot when we have the new board at 22. Right, Stan?
You're right.
Yeah. Okay. Ms. Petrie, and then Mr. Nudo.
Well, there's already an amendment on the floor, but I do want to make my comment, which I made during the study session, and that is... After this amendment gets voted on, I am going to propose an amendment to add somebody to this, and that is somebody from the university who is a soil scientist.
We can take that as another amendment, but as a non-voting member, Patsy, or an advisory
committee? No, as a committee member.
As a committee member. Okay. Mr. Nudo, now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to follow the Farm Bureau's lead on this. I think...
it's a superfluous position. 26-year person who's been in the 26 years ago, I would remind everybody that nothing's been done with this committee. So I don't know how much activeness this person that we put on there is going to contribute. We have done nothing in 26 years. So I mean, they laid out a wonderful program. We all went through it during the study session. I'm satisfied with what they laid out. I'm sure that Susan Monty and the group, the planning group, can improve on that. I just don't know the value of that. And we do have a mechanism for the 22. A tie vote fails in the new board. So it's a different situation. I think 7 is a good number to have in there. And I guess I would just ask for a friendly amendment to change it down to 7 and just get done with this. Can I have a second?
Second.
We have to go back and ask.
Hey, point of order here.
Is that a motion to amend the rules?
Right.
Is that a motion to amend the motion to amend?
Yeah, we can. Can we amend the motion to amend? I don't.
Ask for a friendly amendment.
Ask for a friendly amendment.
I think we can do that. I think we can have a vote on the Mr. Hall's.
We need to vote on the first one. Let's vote on the first one of being 8 members. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Schroeder.
Oh, go ahead and finish your statement.
Okay. Well, I was going to call for a vote on 8 members.
You're talking about 8 members. You're talking about adding another one. Is that correct?
No. No. I'm talking about eliminating one.
Just eliminating one. Okay.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
All in favor
of Mr. Hall being an advisor rather than a voting member of the committee?
Yes. Correct.
Okay.
And leaving it as 8. Right.
Advisory member of the committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay.
Okay, you're right. The main motion, which is to have 8 members of the board. Okay. Any discussion on 8 members? Mr. Newell has already made his opinion known. Ms. Petrie?
Yes, I would like to amend the 8 members to 9 members, and that 9th member be somebody from the university who is a soil science researcher.
Do we have that person in mind, and have they accepted?
Point of order.
Mr.
Point of order, chair, decide who's on the committee.
Okay. You have to make that decision.
Okay. So you are an odd member, right?
Yeah, is there a second to Ms. Petrie's motion?
Second.
Okay, Ms. Anderson. Any discussion on that, Mr. Weibel?
I would say if we're looking for a soil scientist, just say we're looking for a soil scientist. It doesn't matter if it's the University of Iowa, which has a lot of soil, I've heard, or Nebraska, or Illinois. It doesn't matter. It's just a soil scientist.
Okay.
That's what we want. So I would ask for an amendment to just say soil scientist.
I accept that.
Okay. Accepted. John?
I'm opposed to that because one particular thing is that the soils haven't changed for thousands of years. We already know what that is. And secondly, if you want the preeminent expert to come in and help, that's Terry Savko with the Department of Agriculture in the state of Illinois. She is it. She knows everything. She is the lead person in this state. Terry Savko. Brad Eukin, the Farm Bureau, has already had discussions with her. She'd be happy to help us in any way. Her expertise is above anybody around here, period. She is the point person. She is the it. So I don't get why bringing in somebody from the university, no offense to anybody over there, but I don't get why bringing somebody into this committee is really going to add anything when you've got someone like this individual from the State Department of Agriculture who is on top, is the preeminent expert in all this stuff, and she'd be happy to come in, I've been told. So I am not going to vote for this amendment, no.
Astrid?
Would she be happy to come in and go to all the...
I'm sorry, what?
Microphone,
please.
Would you be happy to come in and go to all the meetings and be a voting member of the committee?
Okay, hold on.
If you want to answer.
Hi, Terry Savko has been in consultation with us as we develop this proposal. She's going to be available to review all of the recommendations. She probably physically won't attend the committee meetings, but she'll be a consultant doing work for us.
Stan?
This is for the chairperson. I know a lot about dirt, but do I got to have a degree in soil?
I'll consider you.
Thanks.
Bethany?
I just want to make it known I concur with John because this reaching beyond an expertise area, Terry is perfect. Farm Bureau very much agrees that she should be on this committee. And after all, this is about the agriculture. And if the Farm Bureau blesses her to be on this committee, I think we should listen to that advice from them and participate with their preference.
Esther.
But she's not going to be a voting member of the committee because she won't go to the meetings. She'll be a consultant. But the question is, should there be a soil expert as a voting member of the committee who will be there and take part in the discussions?
Well, and if she's going to be an already is an advisory member, and she's already advising,
but she's not voting.
No, she's non-voting. Well, let's first finish this discussion, Jan, on the soil. On the soil.
I guess this is a question, and maybe Susan or Jan, if they would like, would answer. If we have someone from soil and water conservation. Can they provide the kind of thing that we're asking
it's
for?
We already have someone.
Even though I seconded
it's
it.
It's already on the committee. Yeah.
You know, maybe a soil scientist isn't necessary.
Now, Terry Savko, just to respond, knows Mr. McLeese, who is an Illinois soil scientist, and talks regularly and consults regularly with him. We do have two representatives from the Champaign County Soil and Water Conservation District who regularly work with the LE portion of the LESA system, the soils part. So I think we're pretty well covered.
Any other discussion on that amendment? Al?
We're going to stay with 8. Why wouldn't we substitute this person that Patsy has recommended for the 26-year person? I mean, and why are we adding more people to a committee? Why don't we just, that they're going to be productive? I mean, I think less is better in
this
case.
We haven't added anyone to the committee yet. We haven't voted on it.
No, I know. But that's my point. So, I mean, we're adding with Patsy's thing. We're going back to 9.
These are
we'll have to vote on the amendment.
But I thought I heard you saying that we should take the Farm Bureau's recommendation, and isn't that one of the things that the Farm Bureau wanted to see on there, someone that had worked on this previously?
They do not want. They want to go down to 7.
They wanted to go down to 7. Their written proposal was to not have John Hall vote and to take the 26-year person off.
And they also, and Brad, you can talk to me today, and he said they'd rather not have 8 for a tie. He didn't say we couldn't have 9.
I spoke with him, too, and he wants to be at 7.
Correct. He wants it at 7.
Yes,
you want it at 7. Okay, any other discussion on this amendment? Steve.
Thanks, Al. Would it be possible to leave John on the shelf as a tie-breaking vote? Couldn't we do that?
See, he's shaking his head.
What?
You see,
all comes with the job.
Okay, any other discussion on this amendment? Okay. All in favor of adding a university soil person?
What's that?
Soil specialist. A soil specialist on this committee. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion fails. Okay. Back to the main motion. Okay. Of 8 on the... here we go. Okay. Well, John, you had your hand up first.
Yes, I would move to amend that to 7 members.
Pius, you were going to say something?
Point of order.
Yeah, right. 26-year-old guy. Is this discrimination or something? Why don't we want old people on? So, John, you want to remove the past Champaign County's... represent the original site assessment committee. Okay. Original site assessment, we want to erase that to make it 7 members. Okay, and we had a second from Stan. Right. Okay. Any discussion on removing this senior citizen of great expertise from this committee? Steve?
I want to know if there's a set of rules somewhere that says precisely at what year of age and service that you become worthless. I think...
Thank you.
I'm about ready to leave. I don't know about Lorraine, but... This is
Lorraine. No, she's young. She's young. Use me as an example.
No, I'm talking about years of service on the board. You're talking about the dean of the board there. I'm about ready to hang it up.
Michael, I agree with this proposal. I think we needed a odd number because a tie does fail. We want a majority to be able to come up with something. And I also agree that this is not really a great classification for having somebody else on. It's possible one of the original LISA committee members might fall into one of the other things, and that's just fine. Any other discussion on this amendment? Okay, so yes means we remove this gentleman or lady, and nay means we keep them on. Okay, is that got that? Okay. All in favor?
Roll call, please.
What's that? Roll call.
Roll call.
Okay. Who's going to take it? Are you going to take it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes means we're eliminating this, Mr. O'Connor, right? The senior citizen from this, and no means we're keeping them. Okay?
Alex.
Wait a minute. Lorraine?
I'm getting confused. Okay. We started out saying we want to reduce it to 7. Now we're talking about voting on who to remove before we decide if it's going to be 7.
To make it 7 members, you're removing the position of the person who served on the committee 26 years ago. That's how you're bringing it down to 7.
Want to remove someone else?
You have to. That was the motion to remove that position to bring it down to 7 members.
If we defeat it, then you can decide if you want to remove someone else. A motion from that.
Amend the amendment.
We can amend it again. We've already. Wait, we passed discussion stage. Have we called for a roll call vote?
Yes, the roll call is called for.
Okay. All right, Al.
So one last question: how do we perpetuate this position? There's only 5 people left of the 26. When we go forward and people pass on, how do you perpetuate the position? You've got a designated person in this motion, a designated person from the old 26 year ago group. You got to think ahead.
He's got a point.
He might be 46 years old.
I know.
You just have to have a
conversation.
We ready to vote? Well, they're asking if we would keep this person on and they die. This is a short-term committee, isn't it? That's only going to work for a short time. 5 years from now, if we do an update, we'll probably reappoint a whole new committee. Is that right?
Yes, so. That's correct. But, I mean, any one of these people, get hit by a car, for crying out. We're not... Okay, let's get a roll call vote here, please. Yes, removes this person. No, keeps them.
Alex.
Still yes.
Anderson.
No.
Berkson.
No.
Betts.
No.
Carter.
No.
Coert.
No.
Holderfield.
Yes.
James.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Kurtz.
No.
Langenheim.
No.
McGinty.
Yes.
Michaels.
Yes.
Mosier. I'm sorry. Muto.
Yes.
O'Connor.
No.
Petrie.
No.
Richards.
Yes.
Schrader.
Yes.
Bible.
Yes.
It passes. Motion passes 10-9.
Okay. We now have 7 members. Does anybody want to remove anybody else?
Yes.
Huh? And how about a young person? Can we find a young person on this list?
Real estate developer.
Real estate wants to get rid of the real estate developer. All right. Now we passed this. All right. We have 7 members. Pius, you are directed.
No, you have to have a vote on this.
Oh, that's right. We got to get on a name motion for 7 members now of this commission. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passed. Okay. All right. Pius, you'll will nominate to the board the 7 members.
Next month we'll post for it first.
We'll post for it. Okay. All right, let's move on.
Doesn't this have to go to the full board for approval?
I can explain that. No, but this, first of all, it's a committee for ELOC. Also, the real action is actually, this is procedural. The real action is actually appointing the members to the board.
Right.
It's strictly procedural, set up the real action, which is really very wonderful.
So when he picks them, then we vote for them, and that's when the real action takes place.
The motion to give me the action.
All right, let's go to C. This is for information only, countywide residential electronic collection, page 38. Just quickly, Champaign County agreed to partner with the cities of Champaign, Urbana, Village of Savoy to provide quarterly count with the residential electronic collections during 2010 and 2011. These have been very successful in the past, and certainly feel that we can continue this process. Any discussion on this at all? We're not voting on anything here. It's going to happen. Roy, what would you like to say?
If it's just information only, why do you have to have a vote on it?
No, there's no vote. We're not voting on it.
Oh, okay.
It's going to happen. Yeah. We're just informing you. Okay. And then D, zoning ordinance amendments. John will lead the way on number 1, request to amend county zoning ordinance, zoning case 665-AT-10, petitioner, Champaign County Zoning Administrator. John.
Move approval.
First by Chris. Second.
Second.
What's that?
I think McGinty had the second.
What?
Second.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Langer.
I don't care.
I'm sorry. Was it Brendan? I'm not doing this on purpose. Hold on. Let me check this hearing aid here. Okay. On the left side. Okay. John, explain that just quickly, what we're voting on here.
Okay. Well, with text amendments, the committee makes a preliminary vote at one meeting, and then the item stays at the committee for a month while we await protests from municipalities or townships with planned commissions. The committee authorized this text amendment back in February. At that time, we only talked about increasing the height to 8 feet. In the side and rear yards at the ZBA, there was a concern about the fact that we already allow 6-foot solid fence in the front yards. They decided to add a transparency requirement in the front yard that is consistent with Champaign, Urbana, Lantour, and St. Joseph. There's an updated table as an attachment that illustrates that. That's on page 51. Before they adopted the transparency requirement, they asked Sheriff Walsh for any comments. Sheriff Walsh's comments are in the finding of fact on page 60. We invited Sheriff Walsh to come here tonight. He declined to come. He stands by his previous comments. And so they're listed there for you on page 60 and 61. This was recommended by the ZBA with one dissenting vote. That's rather unusual at the ZBA, but that was the outcome. Nonetheless, it got an affirmative vote of four, which is all it takes for a recommendation.
I'd just like to say that I think it's important that sheriff's deputies, when they approach a home, have as much visibility as possible. And the sheriff made that quite clear in his statement here, safety of the deputies. Stan?
So, John, you're saying here that you're wanting to increase the fence height from 6 foot to 8 foot?
In the side and rear yards.
Okay. But I thought, and if I may, because when I put up my fence a year or so ago, I came to you and talked with you, and there was concerns about, you know, fire hoses and stuff like that, if they had to come from the side or due to, you know, the neighbor. And at first I thought, well, I wanted an 8 foot because of the privacy. But after speaking with you or and some in your staff, I saw what they were talking about, because throwing that hose and different things up over. And then also in this, when I'm reading about this gap or view or whatever you want to call it, most people out in the country, when they put up a fence to begin with, they're doing so because of swimming pools or their pets or what have you. And to me, 6 foot's plenty high. I mean, that's plenty high. We start going 8 foot, from the side, you can't see anything, you know. And I just think we're going to end up with more problems than you know, solving anything. So I guess after looking at this, unless you can tell me exactly why we need to do it, I think 6 foot is fine. It's standard. It shouldn't be 8 foot. I mean, my God, we're creating walls from everybody, and 6 foot does it in its own. So anyway, that's my thoughts.
We only propose this because of the number of requests we've gotten for 8 foot fence. The table that compares residential fence heights shows that virtually all of the cities except for Savoy allow 7 or 8 foot high fence in the side and rear yards. The county only goes up to 6. Now, yeah, it's optional. You don't have to go to 8.
Forcing them to go to 8. If they want to go to 8, they can, but if they want to stay
at 6, they can stay at 6. I mean, it's just an option for them. But we want the front to be transparent so that the sheriff has a safety net. John, I thought your hand came up, and then
okay.
Stephanie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support this because of conformity along with the cities, because of the 8 foot. It's by right. Before, if you had 6 foot, you wanted 8, you had to have a variance to do this. So I don't think it's a big problem, because, like I said, it flows with, because you're going to have your ag and your R1s around the cities anyway. And if that's allowable, I'm just wondering, John, like St. Joe, some of the incorporated municipalities, Mahomet, are theirs in line too?
Yeah, St. Joe allows 8 foot in the side and rear. Mahomet allows 7.
Okay.
The villages in general require it to be much lower in the front than us, and then they still require a transparency in the front.
Right. Okay. Stephanie was there.
John, did you bring numbers of how many requests that you've had for the 8 foot fences? I'm just curious. If there's a large number, then I think it's something we need to look at. But again, when we have the sheriff citing safety concerns for his officers, that just really it bothers me. If he is concerned, I don't think he's trying to prohibit anybody from putting a higher fence, but we also have to remember life safety issues. That's what I'm reading in this.
Well, the transparency was only ever proposed as a requirement in the front yard. The higher height is allowed everywhere else. And I'm reading from the finding of fact on page 54. We had two variance cases, one in October 2007, one in April 2008. Then we had a request in 2008 for an 8-foot fence. and we were contemplating the text amendment, so we told that person, go ahead, and then we'll deal with it if the variance is approved. They ultimately did not build it. We also had one administrative variance that isn't included in this list. So in a span of 2 years, this came to our attention four times, which is a pretty high frequency. The other thing is it just seems odd to people that municipalities are less restrictive on something than the county. And we can't think of any good reason why that's that way. Did that answer your question?
Other than life safety for officers, so the municipalities are fairly comfortable with it with their officers. I guess my concern is, in the cities, there's a higher density. Out in the country, I mean, they're few and far between. And so I look at the value of life versus the value of privacy. And I'm a person that appreciates privacy, but I also appreciate human life. And so if our sheriff is telling us we need to be concerned about this, I want to take that under, you know, the advisement that he has said I'm concerned. So if we have 8-foot side and rear, and then there's a 2-foot transparency, in reading this, trying to digest it, he was comfortable with the transparency on the side and rear, correct?
The transparency is only required in the front yard. He was comfortable with that.
Okay.
He didn't say, I wish you would add it to the side and rear. And in fact, you could see from his comments that he took the time to look at what everybody else had.
Mm-hmm.
It was really surprising that they spent that much time on that. So they didn't ask for transparency in the front rear. They had no concerns about the increased height in the side and rear, I meant. They had no concerns about the increased height in the side and rear. And the other thing I'd like to point out is, we only have fence height limits in the rural areas on lots in the ag districts that are less than 5 acres. If you have more than 5 acres or more, you can build a fence however high you want. If you're in the CR district anywhere, you can build a fence as high as you want, wherever you want on your property. So most of our jurisdiction, in fact, then, really, the only fence restriction we have is for the visibility triangle.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, pass.
Pass.
Astrid.
I do think there is a need for 8-foot fences. A 6-foot fence, if you've got a swimming pool or a trampoline or something, a 6-foot fence is not much of a barrier to teenage boys.
Okay, pass. Pass. Patsy.
Just an information question for John. Do you remember the reason given for the one no vote?
In general, that person was... The person stated that they understood the concern about safety, and in fact, more could be done about safety, but they were just resistant to adding more fence requirements. And I think that was basically because they felt the benefit really wasn't worth the imposition that it puts on the landowner. Everyone agrees that, you know, we have fence standards here. We're proposing to add more fence standards. We don't require permits for fences. And that's an unusual thing, but in fact, it's the same approach taken by the municipalities. So everybody thinks fences are worth regulating, but they don't require permits, which means that it's difficult to make anything really followed on a consistent basis, although a fence that is a violation is as much a violation as anything else. So that person generally was just against adding more restrictions on landowners.
Thank you.
John? I'll be brief. 10 years on ZBA, I can remember numerous fence variances. And mostly, if I remember correctly, they were for individuals or owners who had dogs. You take one motivated dog, a 6-foot fence is like jumping over a lily pad. It's nothing. So 8-foot, 10-foot, people wanted 8, 10-foot. Well, I can remember. So
Chris?
I just wanted to clarify your answer to Ms. Peter's question. The vote on ZBA was not objective to 8 foot. It was objective to transparency requirements.
Exactly.
I'm just going to make a comment. Most of the time, I think an 8 foot fence is pretty ugly, and I don't think anybody's going to go to the expense of doing it unless they have a reason to do it. You're trying to get privacy for a swimming pool or something, or you're on a hill. There's certainly situations where I think an 8 foot fence is appropriate, so I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. Are we ready?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Last one. Okay.
Thank you.
Number two, D2, request to amend Champaign County Zoning Ordinance, zoning case 666-AT-10. Petitioner, Champaign County Zoning Administrator. Move. Jan, second. Mr. Langenhardt. John?
All right, this is a fairly esoteric amendment. As it was originally, as we requested direction originally, it included something to do with wind farms, but that ultimately was done as part of another text amendment that has already been approved. The only two things in this text amendment have to do with making it as clear as possible that the standard conditions for our special uses are waivable, and the genesis of this was when we added the wind farm amendment, we didn't do a good job of tying all the pieces of the ordinance together, and that brought about some disagreements from actually some townships. So this now fixes everything we needed to fix in the ordinance in regards to standard conditions. Now, one thing that we did identify during the course of this hearing, and it's mentioned on page 78 of the finding of fact, we found out something we didn't know. So as it was said here earlier tonight, that was a good day. The standard conditions are waivable, and in fact, state law makes those able to be protested by townships with planning commissions. We didn't know that before. So we identified that. It's here in the finding of fact. I believe we'll be asking to amend the ordinance in the future to make that crystal clear. But anyhow, at this point, in fact, we may get a township protest on this. It's not clear. We'll report that to you at the next meeting if that's the case. But at this time, that's all this amendment is about.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we need anything on the consent agenda, this last one? Nothing goes on? Okay. All right. Chair's report, other than the fact that, just quickly, it's all right, Stan. You can put on your coat. I know it's chilly in here. But sit down. Okay. Now, I just want to say, I was not only pleasantly surprised, but I was... When someone said that this board can't work together, somebody should have been taking pictures on a study session. I mean, it was just one of the best study sessions. Every single person brought some good comments, and I would tell you that this can happen in the future, too. So I want to thank all of those members who showed up for that study committee, and there were 19 of us. So I thought it was just an excellent study session. Thank you all. Let's the business chair's report. That's it. Designation placed on just the one item on nothing on the item. Motion to adjourn. There is no business on the agenda.
I have.
Is there?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. No, I'm not adding. But what?
Okay.
All right,
go ahead.
At the study session, I asked for copies of the statement made by the Farm Bureau person to be available for the county board. Can that be done?
Yeah. You got, who got, somebody got a copy of that.
I
have a copy.
I wasn't aware that you got, I
don't recall you.
I have an email version that I could send out to Deb.
Okay, that would be great. I'd like to have a copy.
She wants a copy of the statement of the phone.
No, I don't need it.
You got to keep on.
You have my back.
Thank you.
Thank you.